69, dudes!
Skip to the end.
Welcome to episode 69 of the Skip to the End podcast. As ever, I'm Ben.
I'm Gemma.
And I'm Mark.
And as soon as I said the number 69, I see Mark start to smirk.
I'm making this a family podcast. You've probably seen on Twitter recently. I'm really trying to cut down, so I'm not acknowledging that joke to start with. Let's move on and be mature. Who am I kidding?
You changed. My word. How are we anyway?
Very, very well, and it feels good to be with you guys and ready to do another thrilling episode of Skip to the End.
Indeed. And on that note, what have we got coming up? Mark, what's our main review?
Well, it's going to be Fast 8, the latest one in the franchise.
Hang on.
Wait. Did you miss the memo?
Oh, what? The one that said I can't be bothered to watch another film about cars and the 8th one?
Exactly.
That's the one.
Yeah, we're going to be watching Free Fire. We changed our mind. We can. We own this podcast. We're not contracted to review certain films. And we were very honest. We just thought there's nothing much we can give. The review would be terrible. We wouldn't be very full of beans. It would be very boring. So we did what we wanted. So it's going to be Free Fire.
Yeah, you've done. You've basically said there that we couldn't give a shit. The truth of it is, we couldn't give a shit about Fast 8, so we're not doing it. Done. Gemma, what is our rewatch?
We're going to be rewatching Darren Aronofsky's The Wrestler.
Oh, yes.
Mm. Body slam into that one.
Combining two of my favourite things, films and wrestling. I cannot wait to talk about that. Our topic of conversation is our top three beloved bad movies. So those are the movies that are objectively bad, but that you love them anyway. And I can see we've had a massive, massive response on the social media with that. So I'm looking forward to seeing what you guys say and what our listeners say also. Mark, who are we mass debating over this week?
The one and only Johnny Depp.
Johnny Depp, indeed.
Oh, it's going to be a good one. That's, again, a very popular one. On social media, you know, let's be honest, it's been our biggest response for the topic since we started and for movie masturbate.
Hey, can you blame him? The guy's a hottie.
But I'd also like to think that the topic was quite a good one, you know. It's a bit of everything, not just because of a hottie.
I don't know, but we're going to be deep in Depp.
Jesus, keep it in your pants, Gemma. Good Lord almighty. And we've got our final round of high five.
High five.
Oh, I'm looking forward to that. It's me versus Mark. Where do we stand on this? Who's won the previous round?
Now, at the moment, I believe both teams have drawn.
So Mark and I could either win it outright.
I think we should.
Or...
what, Team Barky Bark?
Yes.
Yeah, Team Barky Bark back once again.
For the regular league. I'm not going to talk for this rest of this episode.
We tried to do it backwards again for the Renegade Master.
B-boy damage on the ill behaviour.
That's
we got
the rap
it.
You want. I'd like to think that the veterans of this podcast can show the reason why we are the veterans. We can come together and just show Gemma and just lead by example.
Oh, not because you're both older than me.
No.
Oh, shame.
Yeah, so we've got plenty more to talk about as well on the show. Before we get going, though, there's a couple of things I wanted to cover. Again, the show is growing, as I say, every week. So please do get on board with us on social media. Twitter at STTE Podcast, facebook.com/skiptotheendpodcast. Find us on Instagram as well, or check out our website, skiptotheend.co.uk. One of the things that's been happening with this growth in listeners is we've had a lot of people buying our T-shirt. We've been banging on about our official T-shirt for the last few episodes. And one of the things we asked our listeners to do when they bought one of these great T-shirts was to show it to us, to wear it somewhere interesting, somewhere special. And we've been getting pictures in droves, haven't we?
I knew we wouldn't get the grand's funeral. I was really hoping that when Ben said that, I thought, you know, that can just hopefully be a throwaway comment that we don't actually have someone lying in a hearse like look,
open,
skip to the end.
What about Gran in an open casket?
Oh, that would be good.
Basically skipping to the end.
That is horrendous.
Too much.
But we've seen them in, I've seen some in New York.
Japan.
I've seen some in Japan.
Yeah.
Land's End.
Land's End. Yeah, we had one yesterday. A guy went to the Cavern Club in Liverpool.
Amazing.
Which is amazing.
Yeah. So all over. So we're really, really happy with that response. Long may it continue.
Do you know what else is really good as well, guys?
What?
If you had listened to our last episode, you may have noticed you heard a slight crisper tone when you heard me, Ben and Gemma talking.
Yes.
This is thanks to Shure Microphones and our good friends at Richer Sounds, the home TV specialist, who basically, Howie from Preston, our good friend who gives us keyrings and has given us prizes, got us free brand new Shure mics.
Yeah, the Shure 55SH, Elvis. Better known as Elvis mics.
Elvis.
If you Google Elvis mics, you'll know what we're now rocking.
They, let's be honest about it. Even if they sounded terrible, we would be using them because they look the real deal.
They look amazing.
Gorgeous.
Do you
they
feel
look fit.
When you look at them, they're probably a bit too good for us.
Yeah.
To be completely fair, look at them.
They are so cool.
They're sexy.
We'll put a photo of these up on Instagram so you can all like it and stuff because they just look amazing.
They do indeed. And they sound amazing. And let's demonstrate that now. Let's get started. Topic of conversation this time round is our top three beloved bad movies. So we're talking about films that are objectively bad. Films that have been absolutely destroyed by the critics. More often than not, they'll have bombed at the box office as well. We're talking about the ones that have got 10, 20% on Rotten Tomatoes, 3.8 out of 10 on IMDb. Those absolute disasters. But you love them nonetheless. And the point of this, or what we need to do within this topic, is it's no good just giving the name. You need to explain why it is that you love them. For all of its faults, why do you love that film? I want to throw this out to Gemma first, because I've known Mark longer, and Mark and I talk about bad films all the time, especially because most of what Mark likes is shite.
That's my my DVD collection is basically all of social media.
Yeah. So I want to throw it to Gemma first, but before we do want to establish one rule that we brought in last week. We did say that we were not allowed to pick The Room or Mac and Me.
So I've got one choice this week.
Yeah. So they won't be in our list. And frankly, they're just great films. They wouldn't count anyway because they're too good. So, Gemma, over to you, number one.
Okay, I don't think you guys are going to like this one, but I bloody love it. My first choice is Grease 2.
Oh, God.
I love it so much. It's funny because previously I've said that I'm not a big fan of musicals. However, I gave La La Land 10 out of 10. I was banging on about Mary Poppins on the last episode, and I've chosen Grease 2 for this one. Methinks I protest too much.
Yeah.
So Grease 2 is the sequel to Grease, in case you didn't know.
I hadn't figured that out, actually.
Spoilers, come on.
Right,
there's people out there that will not know that.
Ooh. And it's based on an English student played by Maxwell Caulfield, who is dumber than a cauliflower itself. He's got no life to himself whatsoever. But however, he wants to prove himself to be a bit of a big boy in front of Michelle Pfeiffer's gang, the Pink Ladies. Now, this film, it's got very bad music, it has very bad lyrics, the dialogue is pish, and it just looks cheap and tacky. However, they're the exact reasons why I absolutely love them. Sure, Michelle Pfeiffer and Maxwell Caulfield has zero chemistry together. Legend has it, they hated each other during the filming. However, I love the fact that they do kind of work on screen. The sets are all cheesy, the outfits are just ridiculously bad, and it's got a bit of a crap message about reproduction and actually finding somebody attractive just because of what they do rather than who they are. That's essentially the message of Grease 2. However, where are you going to find another film that has songs about prepubescent sex and complete ignorance about what makes a relationship work or not?
You've nailed it. Yeah. There is no other place I can go, only Grease 2.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the thing that interests me, though, is you've said, you know, the dialogue's bad, the songs are bad, the sets are terrible, the outfits are bad. How is this different from Grease?
Yeah, good
How
point.
How is that different from the original?
Come on.
I mean, John Travolta, fair dues, he had a bit of dancing chops to them. But Maxwell Caulfield pretty much dances how I dance now rather than when I was 16 years old. Embarrassed, I shuffle a little bit and I wave my hands in the air like I frankly just don't care. There's just something about it that draws me to it every single time. I used to watch this as a kid, day in, day out. As soon as the video was finished, I'd rewind it back again. Even rewatching this during the topic, I sat there thinking, this is just terrible. This is the worst film I've seen. But in the back of my head, it's going, you bloody love it. And I do, and I can't argue it. It's a barnstormer of a film, even though everybody is just fucking terrible.
Language. Told you. So, does it carry on from the original? Is there any of the original cast? Is the story still...
There's Frenchie from the original film, but she doesn't really need to be there. I think she probably had a contract or she was building a conservatory for a house or whatever. But there is no relevance to it whatsoever. It's just based in the same school. There's a principal who's still in it, but they're pretty much caricatures of what they were in the first film.
So it's just a pure cash-in. It's just a cash-in
massively.
On the legacy of the existing film.
Yep.
Is it written by or directed by the same people?
It's not, no. It's directed by a lady called Patricia Birch, but she's not a director. She's mainly a choreographer for other films such as Boardwalk Empire,
the TV series. Okay.
But shockingly enough, she did the dance sequence for Big.
My Lord.
Yes.
On the piano.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's not going to take that much work, really. It's just two of them. But yeah. Fair play.
As you can see from Grease 2, that is what she came up with.
But Grease 2 is after Big, so her career's just gone...
Yep.
I must admit, I've never seen Grease 2.
I haven't.
No.
I've seen Grease once, and it was just... It's always on at, like, Christmas and all that BBC One, you know. 9 o'clock on Christmas Day, it's always going to be on, but I just turn it off. I just can't be doing with it.
It's fine. This is why I love it so much, so you guys don't have to watch it.
I saw a school play once of kids doing Grease, and I don't think I've ever wanted to die more than in that particular moment of my life.
I was in the school production of Grease.
Imagine you'd watch Gemma.
Why am I not surprised by this?
I was like the backing dancer. I did all jazz hands. I was the smiley lady with the toilet rolls on the head. And yeah, good times.
Can you find some home footage of this video that we could put on our Instagram and Facebook and Twitter for the fans out there?
I've burnt it to the ground because I knew this day would haunt me. So
your mum actually follows us on Facebook.
She does.
I will inbox her and I will find out if
we
can get to this.
Turn the podcast off immediately.
I don't think I can follow Grease 2, if I'm honest.
You're going to have to.
Come on, Mark.
Gone with an 80s film.
Surprise, surprise.
The absolute masterpiece, Masters of the Universe.
Oh, yes. Good Lord, that's a shoddy film.
But it's good shit. This, my friends, is the good shit. So I'm going to get the bad bits out of the way, because I'm not going to fight it all the way and try and defend it too much. I'm going to admit that Skeletor looks like a foreskin coated in Tippex. Okay. Well, I looked at his face.
Just imagine that.
I did instantly think that. And my second big observation is Gwildor looks just like Warwick Davis and Ed Sheeran if they made a baby. That's the notes I took from this. So I'm not going to defend it forever because those two things are pretty accurate. But Dolph Lundgren is one of the greatest actors. If you need a big action hero who can actually act, let's give him some credit. He's not, you know, just the big beefy guy. I think he actually does a very good job in this role for the complete stupidness of him dressing up as He-Man. Mm. But also, even though I said he looks like a foreskin, Skeletor is quite creepy for the time. If you watch him now, you are like, oh my God, this looks pretty bad. And it is an 80s film. Let's think about it. We're looking at... Nearly 40 years old, this film.
Bloody hell.
Which is crazy. That's right, isn't it? 90, 100.
Hold on. How's he gone to 100? What's 30. He talking about? 100?
No, I'm figuratively counting with fingers
90,
there.
100.
30 years old. There we go.
Fucking get this man an abacus.
But the production design looks great. I do think it looks very, very good for the time. The CGI is as good as it can be. The monsters are scary. And Courtney Cox is in it.
Is she now?
Yes, at a very, very young age. Dolph Lundgren, for me, steals the show. I think Skeletor steals the show. It is ridiculous. You're never going to be able
to... Hold on a minute. How many shows have been stolen? Because they can't all steal the show.
Those two working together as the good guy and the bad guy, you'll never see more of a... good versus evil, represented so well as Masters of the Universe. The soundtrack is the most 80s cheesy. You watch it now and you'll cringe at how dated it looks, but it's in a good way.
Mm-hmm.
Come on, defend this film. It is great.
It is one of those that I remember watching as a kid and loving. I haven't seen it since I was knee-high to a grasshopper, so I can't really defend it.
Please watch it again, though, because you'll be shocked about how cheesy and how ridiculous it looks, but you'll appreciate it. You'll be like, I remember being a kid and watching this, having the figures, loving the cartoon. Mm. Amazing.
Yeah. And, you know, if you want to see a foreskin wrapped in Tippex, this is your film.
That's the film for you. You mentioned there Dolph Lundgren being a good actor, and I absolutely agree. He's been cast in something really big recently. It's Aquaman.
So shit.
So I don't think they've announced who his character's going to be, but... You know, if he's still getting these big roles in these big blockbusters.
I wasn't expecting you to say that. I was expecting something ridiculous, but that is awesome. Mm-hmm. Jesus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, back once again. Yeah. Like the Renegade Master.
That's all we're doing now in the episode. That's it. It's had too much of a plug. It's an old song. It's gone. Stop plugging stuff, all right? Now I'm just going to have a sip of my beautiful brother's cider. So, Ben, it's your topic. We've had two classics already, to be fair. They're both in my DVD collection.
Excellent.
So, come on, what have you got?
Street Fighter.
Yes!
So it's a 1994 film based on the classic Street Fighter II computer game. It has this utterly bizarre plot about an international force of soldiers who are trying to bring down the tyrannical M. Bison. And it stars Jean-Claude Van Damme and, inexplicably, Kylie Minogue. And I love this film because, again, I was probably about 11 when it came out and it hit that sweet spot. I was the right age to enjoy this. I was also a huge, huge fan of the game. So I was always going to want to see this film. I was always going to enjoy it. But if you watch it now, as I did this weekend, it really is dog shit. It's an absolute, complete and utter mess, but a fun mess that I still have good memories of. I don't know why they just changed all the characters. So, for example, in the game, you had Dalsim, who was this bald-headed yoga master with stretchy limbs. And then in the film, he's a scientist with a full head of hair, and his limbs don't stretch. So why are you doing this? The one thing that kids love is they wanted to see those characters replicated. It was like Blanka as well. Do you remember Blanka, like the green man with the electric powers?
Yeah.
In the film, you don't see Blanka until about 3 minutes from the end. And instead of looking like this big beast, he looks like... Do you remember the 1970s Incredible Hulk TV show?
Yes. Yeah.
He looks like the Hulk's anorexic brother.
Oh.
And not even remotely...
Not even, I was about to say Hulk, and I was like, oh, I'll still get credit.
No, his little divvy brother, who is not in any way or shape or form threatening. It's really, really... poorly made, and it looks like it was knocked up for about £3. But that's kind of part of its charm because it's so shonky, so ropey. And Raul Julia plays Bison. It was his last film because he was dying of stomach cancer at the time when he was making it, and you can tell because he looks really ill and gaunt, and he is far too good for that. You can see that he's acting everyone else off the screen because they're not even trying, really. And he is giving the most ludicrous of lines, the most weight as a classically trained actor can do. But I feel bad for him that this was the last thing on his CV.
Oh, man. It's like knowing that Kylie Minogue was involved in this. She didn't act. It's not like now when you get some people like Justin Timberlake have got a few films behind them and you actually credit to them because you think, I'll say it now, I think he's a great actor. And in stuff like Social Network, I'm like, it's fully deserved. But sticking her in this, it was just for her ass in those shorts. Yeah. That was it.
She had acted. Like, don't forget she was in Neighbours.
She was in a few Australian films in the early 90s as well.
But anything decent.
Well, no. That's true.
And she is awful in this. She woefully overacts. And she puts on an English accent that is atrocious, like Dick Van Dyke style. It's really, really
Evening
bad.
Evening, Guile!
I think the only reason why she's in the film, apparently, is because a lot of it was filmed in Australia. And the Australian Film Board said, we need you to cast an Australian in one of these roles, or else we won't give you the funding or budgetary help. And the only role they hadn't cast was Cammy. So it was, square pegs, round holes. That's why she got into it. But she's fucking terrible.
That's a shame. I would have got Toadfish from Neighbours because I liked him. He's a good actor. Yeah. No, but it was Bison.
Balrog.
Guile. Strike his hair up. Get it all cut off. I'm telling you, he would have made the film for me.
Here's something for you, though. The film was written and directed by a chap called Stephen E. D'Souza. Stephen E. D'Souza is more famously known for writing Die Hard.
Oh, my goodness me.
Think of that he wrote Die Hard and he wrote this absolute
and then
shower of shit.
The bed. What's he done now? Anything else?
Die Hard 2.
He's got to be working in Sainsbury's or somewhere like that now. That fall from grace. Die Hard is amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One of the best.
I would like them to see another Street Fighter film now. The manga, Street Fighter 2, is unbelievable.
Yeah.
One of the best soundtracks ever. You get Silverchair and stuff like that. I would love them now to actually give it a budget and story that it deserves, and Mortal Kombat.
Well,
it'd be awesome.
They did. They did a sequel, I think it was in 2009, called The Legend of Chun-Li, and it was even worse.
It's because awful.
It didn't have the camp kitsch value that this one does. They tried to make a good movie and just failed miserably. It really sucks.
Was there anyone famous in it?
I think the woman who played Chun-Li was the girl who played Lana Lang in Smallville.
So anyone famous
in it? Kristen Crook? No.
Joe Mangle.
Bouncer.
That would be good. I'm going to watch that again now you've mentioned it. It won't be anytime soon, but I have to see because it must have been 10, 15 years ago since I saw it. Yeah. So that'll be a good one. I've got that on DVD as well. Come on then, Gemma.
My second choice is a film in 1981, and it's based on the legend of Joan Crawford and the relationship with her daughter Christina. My second choice is Mommy Dearest.
Mm-hmm.
Never seen it?
It is the biggest campest film you're ever going to watch. It stars Faye Dunaway's eyebrows and Faye Dunaway. I'd like to make that very clear. It's like she's got two moustaches on her face. It's incredible. And it's about the alleged abuse that Christina, her adopted daughter, faced in Crawford's hands. We don't know whether or not it's true or not. Some people say it is, some people say it isn't. However, I love this film because if you think of the most dramatic soap opera that you've ever seen in your entire life, do a Spinal Tap on it, turn it to 11, and you get this magnificent piece of a film. So the bad things about this film, it's OTT. Faye Dunaway is just screaming like a banshee in most of the scenes and throwing things around and really sort of giving it her all. Unfortunately, you know, she probably thinks it's really serious, but it comes across as just flamboyant and just bloody awful. However, I love it because it is over the top. It is just this complete dramatisation that you would probably see on like Lifetime or some really bad like UK Living or something. The no wire hanger scene is the reason why you have to watch this film alone. I'm sure there's some YouTube clips like floating around in the internet ether. But she throws items around like she's a bloody Olympic javelin athlete. She overacts like she's an extra in Battlefield Earth, and she screeches louder than any drunk girl you will ever see in a Wetherspoons pub. It is glorious. It is magnificent. And you'll want to watch it again as soon as it's finished.
Bearing in mind, we've been with you when you've been drunk.
Hello.
Is that a claim you can honestly make?
I can.
That wasn't too long ago.
It wasn't, was it? Oh, dear.
It sounds terrible.
It sounds shit.
But not
it?
Even good shit. It just sounds awful.
But it's just the way how it's produced. It is produced really well. Like, the scenes and the costumes, it's almost like the antithesis of Grease 2. It looks beautiful on the screen. Faye Dunaway looks like a friggin' mad woman. And it's worth every single second.
Is this the film that French and Saunders did a spoof of
a few years back?
It is, yeah. See, I've not seen the film, but I've seen the French and Saunders spoof, yeah. And I remember that being very funny.
You got to see this. Just even if it's just once, and just don't take it as serious as Faye Dunaway did when she was filming it.
I make a lot of false promises on this podcast. I'm like, Ben, I'm going to do it. And he quotes me back. I'm not going to set myself up to fail. I'm not going to watch it. It sounds so shit.
What a pity.
But Ma, what about the white coat hanging scene? Didn't you ever sell that to you?
I've got it on Steelbook. But
There we go. It's so cringe, but it gives me utter life watching it.
My next film's not from the 80s, guys.
Oh, dear.
What?
1990. And I know
so
Ben.
So close.
I know Ben, I think, hates this film. Tremors.
You can't hate something you haven't seen. I've never seen Tremors, nor will I ever.
One of the greatest, strangest creature films you will see. Kevin Bacon's finest ever role. He should have got the Oscar. Forget the Orange adverts or the EE adverts. This is the role he should be noticed for. Il Bass kicking ass and Fred Ward. Those guys are good actors. You must admit, that is a great cast, even if you're not going to like the film.
No, I must not admit that, because that would be a lie.
This is one of the greatest horror comedies you get, which is before Shaun of the Dead and this. Mm-hmm. This is all about killer, massive like earthworms under the ground that attack and kill this... Oh, mate, look at Ben sitting here laughing. And I'm trying to convince someone by killer earthworms.
No.
This is a homage to all of the 50s B-movies. This is the monster movie that will make you fall in love and become an instant cult classic. It is unbelievable, dude. Honestly.
I have said for years that I will never watch this because you've never been able to sell it to me. But I do kind of think that you and I should get together and get beered up and watch this. And then you can see if you can sell it to me live.
It's a total beer and pizza movie.
Maybe we do that at one time. Yeah. We all bring one film that we've had to try and convince each other that's good.
Mm-hmm. Mommy Dearest.
No, that completely is vetoed.
Oh, come on.
And we'll try and convince each other in a few months and we'll come back and say if it worked or not. But I'll stick to it, Tremors.
Yeah.
Because, Ben, you love Kevin Bacon, surely. What an actor.
I like Kevin Bacon, yes.
You love bacon.
I'm a very big fan of bacon.
Yes.
That is very true.
We're halfway there. But, mate, honestly, these monsters look amazing. Underground, it's like a real threat. Imagine the way I could sell it is Jaws in the Sand. That's what I put on the DVD cover from Skip to the End. Jaws of the Sand. This is the one, dude. Honestly, it's great.
Good
and
Lord.
The good thing I liked about it is they didn't cash in and release Tremors 2, 3, 4, and 5 only last year. So
what?
I'm glad.
Only last year?
Yes. So maybe we have a whole day of it.
So this franchise has spanned 3 decades now.
It's good, isn't it? What else can you say about that, eh? Only Die Hard has probably done that.
Harry Potter?
Star Wars. Harry Potter's been
not
3 decades.
3 decades.
Oh, so I thought you meant the amount of films.
Star Wars is the only one. So Star Wars and Tremors.
So, yeah.
Pretty good, eh?
They're very similar,
isn't
it?
Same league, surely.
Come on then, Ben, Mr. Oh yeah, I don't like Tremors. What have you got?
Oh God, this is so much worse. It's a film, I really hope for your own sake that neither of you have seen it.
Okay.
It's a film from 2001 starring Rob Schneider, and it's called The Animal.
Oh my God, I've heard of this. Oh.
I've seen it, I've never watched it.
No, me neither.
You've seen it, but you've never watched it.
The cover?
No, yeah.
I thought you meant you were watching it, but your eyes just glazed over and you couldn't focus on it. It was that bad. So it's an utterly absurd, terrible comedy where Rob Schneider plays a guy who works for the police, and one day he's out driving towards an incident and his car goes off a hill. He then wakes up and all of a sudden he has these animal instincts, and it turns out that because a mad scientist rescued him and then put a load of animal organs into him. And it really is as stupid as that sounds. So, for example, there's a bit when he's at an airport because a friend of his works there, and a guy goes through the passport control, and then Rob Schneider's character starts sniffing at the air like a dog would, and it's because he realises that this guy is smuggling heroin up his anus. So then there's a scene of Rob Schneider just sniffing this bloke's bumhole for about 2 minutes, and this kind of sums up what this film is about. I mean, the guy's name, the character's name, is Marvin Mange. You know you're onto a winner when that's your lead character's name. It really is an absolute atrocity of a film. And one of the funny things is, when it first came out, it got slated by the critics in the reviews. Of course, absolutely slated. Except for one reviewer, a chap called David Manning, sang its praises. It then later turned out that David Manning didn't exist. It was someone that the Sony marketing team had made up to put a load of quotes on a load of their bad films to make it sound like it was better than it was.
Oh dear.
Oh dear indeed.
Gemma's face.
My mind is blown.
Got one good review and it was made up.
The thing is about this topic, I'm sure that we've all spent this week watching these films again, and I've definitely watched Tremors and Masters of the Universe. Did you actually spend the time in reinvesting in watching this again?
I watched it last night.
Oh my God.
It's one of those, though, that... Do you remember there was a brief period of time where Rob Schneider genuinely was something of a box office draw?
God,
it was when he was doing things like Deuce Bigelow and White Chicks.
Which aren't bad.
Which are okay. And this is in that same vein. It's ridiculously stupid, but it doesn't try and be high art. It's not trying to be Citizen Kane. It's trying to be a film about where a guy starts acting like a chimpanzee.
It's like Citizen Shame.
It is. It's Citizen Shame. It's an utterly, utterly terrible film. But Rob Schneider's quite funny in it. John C. McGinley's in it, who played Dr. Cox in Scrubs. And he's great in this because he plays one of the senior cops who treats Schneider's character like shit. And John C. McGinley is brilliant at playing the arsehole. Whenever he plays an arsehole character, he's pretty much the guy you get. He's great at it. So it's worth watching for him.
I'm going to watch
that alone.
But it is terrible, and it's hard to defend, other than the fact that it's really fucking dumb, and it makes me laugh.
That's enough. If that's all it took, and that's all it does to get into this topic.
Yeah.
Fair play.
And it's like easy comedy.
I kind of want to see it just to see the sort of different animals that he actually has to try and represent and be. Mm.
So there's a bit where he dives into a pond because some kids drown in, and he basically turned into a dolphin, and he's sort of flipping around like a dolphin.
It's so stupid. He then turns into a walrus, Tusk style.
It was a prequel to Tusk.
Oh my God.
Buries his poo.
I will check this one out. This is one I will check out.
I think I'm going
to. It's like 90 minutes long. It's not going to kill you.
My favourite.
And you know it's going to be on Netflix. Is that obvious?
Probably, yeah. Just disengage your brain and you'll be fine.
Is Adam Sandler not involved in this at all?
Oh, he's in it. Yeah, he has a cameo. Of course he does.
Oh, God.
He produced it. Duh.
You look like you've instantly regretted saying, yeah, I'll watch that.
I'll give it a go and I'll report back by next episode. There's my promise to all of the listeners out there.
You lying
record bastard. Record this.
Never on IMDb. Gemma, your final choice.
Oh,
make it a good one.
I certainly will. We're going to go back to 1991 and we're going to go with Suburban Commando.
Yes, amazing.
It's really good. I don't care if people say it's shit.
Has anyone ever said this is shit?
I've had a few people going, this is just the worst of the worst. Yeah. Like, this is
smack
wrestlers.
Them in the face.
I will do. You know what? Smack them with a chair.
Yes.
Or a table. Or a ladder. So for those of you who've never heard of it, why, first and foremost? But this is directed by a guy called Burt Kennedy. Now, he did a lot of westerns on TV. And he did one which was hilariously called, Where the Hell's That Gold? Which, again, rewatch. But it stars Hulk Hogan, the daddy of all wrestlers, as a guy called Shep Ramsey, who's an alien superhero, but he's advised to take a bit of a break, and he ends up crash landing in a suburban area on planet Earth. Now, this film has the likes of Christopher Lloyd and Shelley Duvall, two very famous actors who have done two very famous roles in their career, but they kind of look like they switched off the acting button when they did this film. Hulk Hogan, fair to his name, you know exactly what you're going to get. If you watched any of his vignettes and back in the day when he was a big WWF superstar in the 90s, you know what you're going to get with him. You're going to get a lot of rage and leg drops, although no leg drops in this film.
Oh, you just said there was. I was just about to download it.
You kind of understand what you get with wrestlers when they're doing that performance of acting. They don't require a De Niro level, but you know what? Who cares? They're just balls to the wall, doing what they're doing, and just having a bloody good time. And it's also the debut of a Mark Calloway. Now, for those of you who know wrestling, what's his alter ego's name?
The Undertaker.
Ah, yeah. And this was before he even set foot in the ring. This was his debut.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. But it's an absolute cheese fest. But hey, I'm not lactose intolerant. I'm susceptible to cheese. And it's just fun. It's just a real fun film. To kind of summarise this film, it has Hulk Hogan on a skateboard on a handstand at the same time. And he's doing like tricks and flips and...
I'm sold.
...crushing a melon in front of an old lady's face, which is great.
That's a great iconic scene. That's one of the big scenes up there with you're going to need a bigger boat. Yeah. This is the one.
Melon crushing.
Wow.
But it's just fun. And you know what? Hogan, true to his form, he's actually genuinely funny in this. There's times where he's either really over the top or he's not, but who cares?
What you're getting.
Yeah, it's a man in his late 30s, beefed up to the gills, with a bald patch on his head and white blonde locks.
Beefed up. Yeah. Roided up, I think is the term.
Allegedly.
No. Most definitely.
You say it was Hulkamania. I don't know, it was with the roids.
Does he rip his shirt in this true Hulkamania fashion?
He doesn't, I'm afraid, but he does wear a sporting headband.
Nice.
Which is to hide the baldness. The only thing I really remember of that film is the fight scene he has with The Undertaker.
Yeah, what, when he's like lifting him up throughout the building?
Yeah.
And then I think The Undertaker has like a face full of toilet by the end.
Wow. I hope that when he gets inducted to the Hall of Fame, they show that clip.
Oh, yeah. Please do.
It's a terrible film. You've made up for it. It's an absolute awful film.
It's the worst of the worst. But I love the worst of the worst.
I will watch it again one day.
Yeah,
maybe when we want to do a Hulk Hogan night. We'll actually watch some good Mania moments.
No holds barred.
And then Hulk Hogan, I'm coming for you. Mark.
Yes, I'll save you right now.
It's your one.
My very final choice is a film that neither of you would have seen. It's called Shark Attack 3 Megalodon.
Oh my God,
of course I haven't seen it.
Terrible.
Trust me, okay. So me and my friends, you've met Benny, you've met Boo, who was on the episode.
Mm-hmm.
We all go to a log cabin every year and we get the worst films we can find. So we went to the pound shop and just picked up any we could find on the way to Borough Wash in the middle of Derbyshire, this really weird inbred place that you'd see on Hills Have Eyes. Really weird.
You're giving away too much about yourself now. You're going to have people stalking you to Borough Wash.
Sound like an extra.
Staying there for months. And we went on the way and we saw this Shark Attack 3. We're like, we haven't seen the first or second, but we'll go for it.
We understand the plot lines.
But luckily, the reviews say you don't need to see the first two. But this stars John Barrowman as the lead role. The famous John Barrowman. This film is one of the worst films, straight to sci-fi, you know, the sort of thing.
Yeah.
But it's like The Room does a shark, The Room does Jaws.
Oh, hi, Shark.
I love how all of your films are somehow like Jaws. Jaws in sand. The Room does Jaws.
Every time we see this megalodon shark, which gets as big as a house, it eats a whole ship at one point, and the CGI is up there with Birdemic. Yeah. You need to see this film, dude, honestly.
It sounds realistic as well.
It's so good.
Like everyday life.
It is amazing, honestly, guys. The effects are the worst I've ever seen. But you know when something is so bad it's good? Like we said, The Room and stuff.
Uh-huh.
This is it. This is the one where the acting is so atrocious that you can just kind of see them reading the cards. But it even makes stuff like Sharknado look like a masterpiece. It's even lower budget than that. But there's the best ever chat-up line that's made it into the best chat-up lines in film history. Are you ready for this?
Yeah.
I want you to hear this.
I'm exhausted.
Yeah, me too, but... You know, I'm really wired. What do you say I take you home and eat your pussy?
Oh my God!
That is the line of this film after they've just been for a whole day working together to find evidence of where this shark tooth came from.
Sounds like he's just asking her if he just fancies grabbing a bite to eat.
He did ask for a bite to eat.
Yeah.
How casual is that slipped in?
And the thing is, you joke, but that line works.
And if you're telling me that's one of the, up there is the greatest lines in cinema history, that is the one. You weren't expecting that, were you?
Well.
You should have saved that for High Five.
I've seen on social media people join in with our rewatches and they get involved, and when we talk about topic choices, don't bother with this one, okay? Because you'll be giving me a hard time. It's terrible, but I love it, and it's got a place in my heart. And one day, guys, I'm going to get you drunk and make you watch it. I promise you.
Yeah, I would wear a chastity belt, Gemma. Cause...
I'm coming in like concrete on my bottom half.
This is your topic, Ben. Go out with a bang.
I'm finishing it off with a film from 2006 called Southland Tales.
It was
Richard Kelly's follow-up to Donnie Darko, and it's the weirdest goddamn movie I've ever seen. I've seen this film maybe 5 or 6 times, and I still don't know what happens. I don't know what it's about, I don't understand it, but it kind of mesmerises me because he swung for the fences. He really went for that home run. In the end, it turned out to be a bunt. But at least he put the effort in. You know, I like people who try, even if they fail. And by God, this is a failure. But it's an honourable one. So for those of you who haven't seen Southland Tales, it stars the most eclectic and weird cast you'll ever see. The main lead roles are played by The Rock, who plays a movie star who has amnesia. The next role is played by Sarah Michelle Gellar, the erstwhile Buffy the Vampire Slayer, who plays a porn star called Krista Now. And then there's Sean William Scott, a.k.a. Stifler, who plays identical twins Roland and Ronald Taverner. And the film... He also has amnesia. I don't know why there were two characters with amnesia, but there are. And then it also involves this a new energy source that works via quantum entanglement called fluid karma. There's also rifts in the space-time continuum, because it's Richard Kelly and he can't not do a film about rifts in the space-time continuum. I don't know what happened.
I feel so confused.
I feel like I've got amnesia just listening to it.
There's just a lot of shit has been thrown at the wall and almost none of it sticks, but you can't help be mesmerised by it because it's just this clusterfuck of epic proportions. And I honestly don't get it. And it's so schizophrenic, so... Justin Timberlake is in it, and we were just singing his praises a bit ago, and I do like Timberlake as an actor, but he's terrible in this, because he's affecting this really thick Texas accent that doesn't work at all. And then midway through the film, apropos of nothing, he just breaks out into a musical number, where he starts singing All These Things That I Have Done by The Killers. And it's not just him singing to himself, it's an actual musical number with production and all that kind of stuff. It's not a musical, this film, by the way. It just has one random musical number in the middle. It is utterly batshit crazy. I really don't get this film. And it was one of the most colossal flops in movie history. So it was made on a $17 million budget. At the cinema, it made $400,000.
Oh, yikes.
God. Yikes indeed.
4 of those was Ben. So, you know what I mean? You do the math.
And the thing is, the film, Richard Kelly, because he got two up his own arse after the success of Donnie Darko. Even though it was any kind of low-level cult success, he then thought he was this sci-fi master. So not only did he make this film, there was also a trio of prequel comic books, graphic novels, that make even less sense than the damn film.
Shouldn't have to. That's what I'm saying. I'm not... Donnie Darko, you heard our rewatch a few weeks ago. It is such a masterpiece. Usually a director goes on to an even bigger achievement afterwards. I know it's sometimes setting the bar so high. But to go this low with such weird miscasting as well, and wasting people like Sarah Michelle Gellar, who can act. Look at Cruel Intentions.
Yeah,
she can do a range of acting.
Speaking of miscasting, your mate's in it, Kevin Smith. He plays a legless war veteran.
Are you serious?
Deadly serious. With a load of prosthetic makeup and a big fake beard on.
But now I need to see it.
Amy Poehler's in it. She plays a neo-Marxist terrorist. It's the stupidest fucking
Leslie
film.
No, as a terrorist?
Yeah.
I'm not buying.
My God, it is insane. It's difficult to sit through, especially if you sit through the original version. So he took it to Cannes, and it was a 2-hour, 40-minute cut, and he was booed out of Cannes. It had one of the worst receptions in the Cannes Film Festival history. So the studio then said, we'll only release this if you chop 20 minutes out of it, and he did. So try and see, if you're going to watch it, watch the director's cut, the full, almost 3-hour version of this shit. Good Lord.
But we're supposed to be bringing stuff that we beloved and we absolutely...
But I do. I've told you, because it's so out there. Because he's left nothing on the table. He's gone, right, fuck it. I think in his mind he's thinking, shit, man, I might never get to make another film again. So every half-assed, half-baked, ridiculous fucking idea I've ever had, I'm putting it all in this film. Oh, and I'll bring Kevin Smith as well. You know, it's ludicrous. But I can't help but respect it.
I'm glad he adds that in at the end, because until he says that, I'm just thinking this sounds so shit.
It's wild. It's absolutely wild.
Perhaps I'll enjoy it now. Perhaps I need to take some drugs and watch
it. Yeah, I think that would
probably
help.
Drugs are bad. Just saying that.
Okay.
Come on then, I need a break. I need social media. That's what I need. Kevin Smith's in something I didn't know. I will have to watch it now.
Yeah, I thought you knew everything about him.
Wow. It's the prosthetics, man.
And a fake beard.
Yes.
On top of the other beard.
Yeah, that's
true. That works. So, social media. We've got Miranda Dorfler at Doc Psycho. I don't know, that's how you pronounce it. Vampire's Kiss. Yes.
Nice.
Jingle All the Way.
Yeah.
And Repo Man.
Oh, very Repo cool. Man's good. Mm-hmm.
Stephen Wilson at Stephen Wilson 04 says, Cool as Ice, Chill Factor, and Ballistic X versus Sever.
Ballistic X versus Sever is one of the shittest films you will ever... Have you seen that?
No.
I think
it's like Lucy Liu and Antonio Banderas battling out against each other in an absolute piece of shit.
Sold.
I want it.
Shitegeist at ShitegeistPod says, Batman and Robin, The Wicker Man remake, and the greatest worst film of all time, Ninja Terminator.
I've never seen it, but I bet Mark has.
I've got Steelbook.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
3D, 4K.
BroRom1 at Blind iPod said, Redneck Zombies, Krull, and Hudson Hawk. That's a terrible film.
That came through loads, and
really?
Krull did, yeah.
Awful.
Those movie guys at TMG underscore podcast said, The Room, of course.
We'll let that go.
The Running Man.
It's just a good film.
That's good, yeah.
And Lawnmower Man.
That's a shit film.
I need to watch that again one day.
It's the worst CGI.
It is.
At the time, though, it was like, oh my God, groundbreaking.
Cutting edge, wasn't it? Yeah. Now it's just awful. Phoenix Shanklin at da_nerdette said, Showgirls, Colour of Night, and The Waterboy.
Oh, the Waterboy.
Babby Boucher. Jay Newcastle at j_newcastle says, Heavy Metal, Paycheck, and The New Wicker Man.
Paycheck is awful.
Is that Affleck?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, dear. Michael Clancy at Clancy Hi-Hat says Wild Wild West.
Rubbish.
Nope. League of Extraordinary Gentlemen and so Punisher Warzone.
Yeah, and that's like the best of the three Punisher films, yeah. But it's still shit.
James at JLo3133 says Hard to Kill, Marked for Death, and Out for Justice. So basically, anything Steven
Seagal.
That's
a trilogy night in itself.
Oh, yeah. Then finally, we have Carl Sutton at CarlSutton9 that says, Troll 2.
Yes.
Showgirls and Garbage Pail Kids movie.
That movie's awful. Really, like, it haunts your dreams.
I watched it once as a kid, and I'll never watch it ever again in my entire life.
Sounds scarier than Troll 2, if I'm honest.
Mm. Troll 2. Remember when we did that?
I do.
It's my topic.
Yeah.
On the next episode, it's episode 70, so it's a big one. We can let the cat out of the bag. We're going to be doing Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. So it's big. It's huge. But I want to have a bit of fun. And I miss ripping into stuff. You know, when we have a really good, savage rip sesh. So we're going to do it again. We're going to do our top three most annoying characters in the history of film.
Oh, nice. God, yes.
I'm not running a fucking pizza delivery service. Do you want the weapons or you don't want the weapons? They're assault rifles. You said rifles. Justine, you said rifles, doll. They're fucking rifles. What do you want?
You fill up my senses like night in a forest, like the mountains in springtime, like a walk in the rain, like a storm in the desert.
We've been to our local cinema to watch the latest Ben Wheatley film, Free Fire. That's right, if you missed the intro, we're not doing Fast 8.
Shame.
Exactly, shame indeed. The film tells the story of two gangs who arrange to meet in a deserted warehouse to go through the sale of a number of firearms. The sale does not go to plan and basically turns out to be a huge shootout where every man is playing for himself. It really is a film about survival and many, many deaths. There is not much more to this film. It's an hour and a half and it really is a complete and utter war between everyone. I'm not going to go into the ins and outs because that's why Gemma and Ben are here. But what I am going to do is throw it straight to Ben.
I loved this movie. It was so much fun. I sat there with a big daffy grin on my face all the way through. The film essentially is incredibly one-dimensional. It is just a shootout for 90 minutes. It's just gunfights and one-liners. But the gunfights, the action scenes are enthralling and thrilling. And the one-liners are really damn funny. It just worked for me on every single level. And I really want to see it again. Loved it.
Gemma.
It's protection from infection.
That's the worst one I've ever heard. But I understand you're trying to do a South African accent there, yeah?
Oh my goodness, Ben Wheatley is going to be remembered very, very much in the future. And what a film to add to the collection he's already done. For me, this is incredible. You're not going to find another film that's going to give you so much joy right now. It's brilliant. It's so, so good.
We took a risk, guys. We did actually ditch at the last minute going to see a huge blockbuster, a huge film that's at number one right now. Probably the best decision we've ever done since we started this podcast.
Hell yes. Mm-hmm.
Ben Wheatley made Reservoir Dogs for us.
Mm-hmm.
He really did his own version. This should not work. An hour and a half of one scene. Remember, it works for 3 hours for The Hateful Eight in one location. And we got bored and we ripped it a new one.
Yeah.
This film shouldn't have worked. If you told me it's a shootout for an hour and a half with a few one-liners, fuck off, I'm not watching that. Ben nailed it. It was unbelievable. We had a few drinks before we went to see it. Ben, you had a few more than us.
Yeah, I was 5 years deep.
And I was worried that maybe that might cloud your judgment. But I laughed and I laughed and I had the best hour and a half that flew by since we've done this podcast. It's that good.
Yeah.
It really is. Unbelievable, great fun. And I'm so, so happy we changed our minds with our review.
Oh, me too. So let's get into the most fun thing. So Gemma tried to do a South African accent. Yeah, that was
tried. I thought I achieved it, but each to your own.
So that was in honour of Charto Copley, who plays a character called Vern, who is the main gun dealer. And he is just riotously funny for two reasons. One, because they give him the best lines, and two, because South African accents are inherently funny. And I mean no offence to any South African listeners we may have, but lines delivered in a South African accent are just funnier than if they're not. And he has such crack comic timing as well that everything he had to say, he just sold it perfectly. I couldn't stop laughing at the guy. I just wanted more of him
watching Vern.
Yeah, puns on his own name.
He's magnificent. He just carried so much charisma throughout the whole movie. And even when he wasn't on screen, I was finding myself looking out for him, going, where's Vernon? Where is he?
Yeah.
Why isn't he in more films?
He will be. This is the film that will give him a lot more roles, surely.
I hope so, because he's magnificent.
He's done a fair few, though, hasn't he? He was in the god-awful remake of Old Boy.
Hardcore Henry.
I've not seen it, have I? No, and I never will. Yeah.
Hardcore Henry.
Maleficent he was in.
Yeah.
So he's building up a bit.
Yeah.
I absolutely loved him, and every single line he said, he laughed at. Even when he wasn't trying to be funny, it got to the point where it was just like a puppet show, and every time he came on, me, Ben, and Jim, I'd turn around to Ben, and we were actually laughing out loud, even though he'd just be like, get here! That was it. All he'd say is, get here! And we were laughing and laughing, and he's amazing. I could watch him for 10 hours.
Yeah.
The funny thing you said there, Ben, is about the accent, is this is quite political, and I don't mean any offence, but when I watched the Oscar Pistorius trial, and he's like, and he was in the courtroom, and he's going, I didn't kill her! I was hysterically laughing, knowing that this shouldn't be happening. He's like, I didn't hit her!
And
he
was crying,
and he was sitting there crying, it's bad, I don't know. But when I watched that trial, I was wetting myself because I couldn't take him seriously, sobbing. He was like, oh, shot her in the head! And I was like, what is this? So when it's actually put into context of a good film where the lines are supposed to be comical, I find it even funnier.
So I need to interject at this point. Just to describe the scenario as it now stands in this room. So Gemma and I have both just spent the last solid minute with our jaws touching the floor in abject shock at what you've just said.
Brie Larson's in this film. What did we think of Brie Larson? We recently saw it in the new Kong film, right?
Well, she had more to do in this film than in that one, put it that way.
I'm really, really glad she did this film. Yeah, it shows she can have fun.
Yeah, she was great, and she came in at the last minute. It was supposed to be Olivia Wilde was supposed to do that role, and then she dropped out for scheduling problems, and Brie came in, but she's great fun, really good in it.
Held her own against the testosterone that was all throughout the movie. Mm-hmm. She was sassy, she didn't rely on anybody else at all, and she broke the conventions that were expected amongst female characters in a 1970s setting. She was fantastic.
The big news in this film for me, though, was Armie Hammer. absolutely is a star. Why isn't he in more things? Because, you know, the guy is handsome. He's got to be about 6'5". Mm. He's a damn good actor. He's full of charm. I'm looking at this guy thinking, if they're going to make a Green Lantern film, there's your lantern there. You know, he should be in blockbusters. He should be winning awards. He should be doing it all. This guy is fantastic.
He is. The Lone Ranger really harmed his career, I thought. Mm. He was even great in The Social Network as the twins.
Yeah, yeah.
I was transfixed by him, not only because he's an absolute fitty, but he's got the acting chops as well. He is, like Ben said, he is a leading man.
Yeah.
He's the guy.
I say give him Bond.
Yeah.
Never give an American Bond. Never give an American
Bond. Okay. I'm with you. I think that's a great idea, Mark.
He's unbelievable. He was it's such a delight. And like you said, I want to now watch more and more. And could be the film. I know it's not huge and it's not raking in loads and loads, but hopefully a lot of these actors will go on that have got small parts in this film, and we'll see them in more and more.
Yeah.
Just referring back to Gemma's attempt at a South African and Mark's really shameful attempt at copying Oscar Pistorius's voice, some of the accents in this film weren't on point. If I have to find any fault in this, especially Sam Riley, he seemed to forget that he was meant to be from Boston rather than New York, so his accent kept flitting from one to the other. Because I think he's English, isn't he, Sam?
Yeah,
Riley,
he is. Yeah. He used to front an indie band.
Did he now? Mm. Yeah. So that inconsistency kind of took me away from his character a little bit. That let him down. But if that's the worst complaint I can find, you know, you're looking good, aren't you?
But then we had Cillian Murphy doing the accent all the way through.
It's odd. I don't think I've seen Cillian Murphy use his real accent in a film in a long while.
I wonder what he actually sounds like when he normally talks.
Well, like that.
Yeah.
Probably sounds like Brad Pitt from Snatch.
That's what I mean.
Exactly.
Yeah,
he's
Irish. He's
completely like that.
Yeah.
I've just completely made a dick out of myself not knowing that he's Irish.
Don't worry, Mark, that's not the worst thing you've said.
By a long shot.
Just the name Murphy, you know what I mean?
Didn't mean to say that.
Well, you're as bad as me now, so when we get complaints in, you've just said long shot as a pun about his wife's head being blown off. Out of order. I find it offensive.
Moving on.
But
speaking of headshots, that's what I wanted to come to. One of the things I love about this is because it's one big gun battle for 90 minutes, a lot of people get shot. But pretty much every shot that someone takes is a flesh wound. So people are getting shot in the shoulder, in the legs, their side, etc. No one gets shot in the head until right near the end. So Vern, Charlotte Copley's character, takes a headshot and dies. And it is so much more powerful that no one got shot in the head till the very end, because that makes his death more symbolic. It makes it more impactful because everyone else just got flesh wounds. Yeah. And it wasn't until after the end of the film I thought, oh, okay, I wouldn't have cared so much if we'd already seen 10 people get shot in the head by that point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's actually a really good point. It's nice and refreshing, because all we normally see is bang, dead, bang, dead.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And
yeah,
seeing these people struggling at the end, you know, Cillian's character is holding his leg, his shirt's all ripped, his blood's pouring out, and that's how it would be. It's not just one shot and you're dead and who's next? You know.
Other characters saying, don't go to sleep, don't feel, you know, stay awake.
You've probably got about 2 hours left until you die.
Yeah. Best thing for me was probably the way how Sam Riley's character went out with a slow van playing John Denver and his head essentially becoming a crunchy tomato.
Oh, God, the deaths were amazing.
They were spectacular.
The director needs an Oscar. Not for this, but in his life.
It's going to happen.
He is the next big thing. Ben Wheatley as a director is fantastic, and he co-writes it with his partner Amy Jump. I think their last few films they've written together. As everyone knows who listens to this show, their last film, High Rise, was my film of last year. I think he's the real deal. Mm-hmm. I think he will go on to be our generation, or our country's Scorsese, or our country's Tarantino. I see no reason why he couldn't be, because he is so inventive and such a smart filmmaker. I just love his work, and I can't wait to see what he does next.
When you think about the entire story, it's such a simple story, yet it's so original as to what we've seen in the last 10 years, 20 years maybe.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a gunfight.
And it shouldn't work.
It shouldn't work, but it the whole thing kind of fused together perfectly. The casting, the story, the dialogue, which was so witty.
Yeah.
Everything about it was just the real deal.
And an hour and a half running time, you would think at one point maybe you're starting to think it's getting a bit thin, or I've seen too many deaths. I would have watched another hour, and I was gutted when it ended. I thought, Is that it?
But that's the genius of Wheatley films, the ending. It ends just in a snap of a finger. There's no explanation. You're sometimes left to decide exactly what happens next. The guy, he is a legend in the waiting. He's a legend in the waiting.
I've not seen many of his other films as well. So I saw High Rise after Ben absolutely gushed over it. And I saw Kill List, but that's all I've seen.
Yeah. Check out Sightseers. So good.
That good or?
Yeah, massively.
Up there with this?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah,
big words.
I'll take it.
I trust
fantastic.
Ben as well. Ben, are you agreeing with this? Because I will have to go and invest my time.
Big time.
One of the best endings as well.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be honest, guys, I am completely gushed out. I think this film was unbelievable. I'm sure I'm going to get complaints about what I said, so I just want to go on record and say I apologise to anyone that was offended. So, there you go. It's too late.
The damage
isn't it?
Has been
done. It's too late. That's also what Oscar said. So, let's score this, okay? Let's go straight with Ben.
Good Lord Almighty. 9 out of 10. I enjoyed it. I thought it was fantastic. Again, I was 5 beers deep, but 9 out of 10.
Are you going to watch it again sober, or is that it?
I don't think I need to.
Gemma?
9 out of 10. Fantastic. Maybe I was a little bit too overambitious with the La La Land review, but I do think this is better than La La Land.
Well, duh, for fuck's sake.
But maybe I was ambitious with that scoring, but this is incredible.
Sod it, I'm going to go 9 as well.
Yay.
It's probably the best enjoyable film I've had this year.
Mm-hmm.
Logan was bloody good, but this I went in with the expectation of, I don't know what much this is about. See how it is? Wow. So that's it. So, Free Fire gets a skip to the end, 9 out of 10. Like that, guys?
Yeah.
Ooh, best one, yeah?
That's really good.
You're all right.
Yeah, it's all right. It's time to give away some prizes, but also announce the winners of the last competition from episode 68, Ghost in the Shell. And tying in nicely, we had the Ghost in the Shell box set, which consisted of the Blu-rays for the film and the animated series. So the question we put out there was, what rating did we actually give it on the episode for the new release of Ghost in the Shell? It was a measly 4.
It's a 4 out of 10. Rightfully deserved.
So, Stephen Wilson, you're not going to get the new film. Don't worry. You're going to get all the classics and the original series, and that will be coming to you. So, thank you very much for that. We also put out a competition to win a Last Exit Warriors t-shirt. Have you seen the print, guys?
I did see it. Yeah, it looks very good.
Really good response to that. Really easy question. What year did that film come out? And it's also a Smashing Pumpkins song. So, Ben?
1979.
Yes. So I'm confident in your answer there. And Michael Hutchinson has won that. Is he a famous singer?
Michael Hutchins won.
Oh, okay. He hasn't won.
He's very dead.
Yes, I'm not going to comment any more on stuff like that because I feel like I'm going to get complaints as it is. So he'll be winning that. And they were really generous. They gave us a Blade Runner t-shirt as well. And the question we put was, what is the sequel title of the sequel that's coming out?
Blade Runner 2049.
It is. And Ben, you can win that because you love yourself very much. But we'll also give one to @Sakshi7UKS. So you'll be getting one of those on Twitter. And you probably saw, and I'm not announcing all 50 names, but did you see the response to the keyrings this week?
So many responses.
People have been going nuts for those keyrings.
Yeah.
I was not very loved at home when I was sitting there bagging these all up when I said I was going to take the wife out for the day. But it's good, and they're all going to be getting these keyrings. And do you know what? Stick around for the next few minutes because you might find out how to win some more of those.
Ooh.
So let's give away some new stuff this time round. The new film starring Jamie Foxx, Sleepless, which is out in a few weeks. We've got a shirt, we've got a wallet, a watch. Some sunglasses and a keyring. Really simple. Jamie Foxx plays which character in that film? Fast 8. Even if you were tuning in today to listen to us talk about Fast 8.
Great film.
Brilliant. Absolute masterpiece. Yeah. It's the best one of the year.
Oh, clearly.
I can't wait for number 9. So we're going to give away a adrenaline experience of going away and having a quad biking experience for 4 people. That is decent. So thanks very much to our friends at Universal. What is the character that The Rock plays in that film? That's a hell of a prize, isn't it? And I want to see people with our t-shirts on quad bikes.
Nice.
That would be good. We've had a new company come on board, WrestleCrate. So they heard that we're doing The Wrestler, and they're going to give us a signed collectible from a WWE legend, a t-shirt, a DVD that you can't buy in the shops, and loads of WWE figures and loads of stickers and stuff that you can't get. Look at Ben's eyes. Yeah. Like, I want to win that.
Yeah,
I want to win that.
Big time.
Stick around and let us know what rating we actually give The Wrestler on the rewatch. That's a good one.
Mm-hmm.
And thanks to WrestleCrate. It looks really good. Like, signed stuff, man. If something like Finn Balor's in there, we're having that.
Yeah,
we're keeping that stuff. And as I just said, the keyrings. We've given 50 away and we had 100. So I'm going to give away another 50 this week. All you need to do is leave us a iTunes rating. Anything about an iTunes rating, guys?
Five stars.
And also, I'll randomly pick people on Twitter and Facebook. I love these people that leave us and tell us they've listened to every episode in a day and all this. If you carry on doing stuff like that, we will reward you for the love you give us. So stick around in 2 weeks' time for episode 70 when I'll announce the winners for all of this incredible stuff.
Now time for Movie Masturbate. Always remember the spaces, guys, because it sounds rude. Anyway, on the last episode, we picked out from the pot Johnny Depp to Movie Masturbate over. So what we're going to be doing is we're going to be picking our favourite performance from Johnny Depp's career, and we're going to say why we love it so much. So I think we're going to throw this over to Mark to do this on the first round. So Mark, what's your favourite one?
Edward Scissorhands. And I'm really hoping we don't have just crossover. No, yes, I broke the streak.
No, neither do I.
Brilliant. Have you both seen this film?
Of course.
A very dark fairy tale done by the master of Tim Burton. At this time, he wasn't doing every single film he ever made with his wife and Johnny Depp.
Our current wife.
So, well, yeah. It was tragic how much they worked together. And in the end, they ruined this legacy. But it started at a very strong point for me. And Edward Scissorhands is an amazing film. Very gothic, very well made, very creative and very original. Mm-hmm. So hats off to Tim Burton. But it is all down to the performance of Johnny Depp. The story really makes me just completely fall in love with him. He just wants to be accepted. That is simply the film. And it's so tragic to see that he is not going to be when he has these huge, huge scissors for hands. I think it's a very bizarre film, a very hard performance to do. But anyone else would struggle. But Johnny Depp just does it effortlessly. And he isn't that much into his career at this point. He hasn't done loads and loads of films. It's his first major film that you really kind of go in, who's this? This guy could do well. His hair's crazy. He shows this emotion. He doesn't talk much. And like Silent Bob, you know, the acting is done all
the same. Jesus. Like a mirror.
He's not overacting, but he's not underacting. He just nails this performance. And the more I watch this film, the more I respect him. And it upsets me that he's not doing these sorts of original great films. But this, for me, is his finest and my personal favourite performance he's ever done.
Yeah, it's a great film. And I'm going to make a wager with you now before we carry on. I bet that all three of our picks are before he did Pirates of the Caribbean. Because that's really the dividing line between the good Depp and the bad Depp. Prior to that, he was an indie boy. He did a lot of independent, smaller films, lower budget, quirkier scripts. And he was fantastic. And one of the best examples of that is Edward Scissorhands. Mm-hmm. And then he did Pirates of the Caribbean. And now he just does whatever shit will pay him.
Apart from Yoga Hosers.
Yeah, because that's a masterpiece.
You're
obviously
right, though. And that first film that we saw, Jack Sparrow, I actually liked.
That was a good film.
I thought this was great.
It's fun.
But nice now we get the fifth one coming this year.
Yeah, because they drive a truck full of cash up to his house and say, "Do another one, please, Johnny."
And he says, "Okay, I'll do that."
Another Mark accent there. Nails it again.
That's his over the top Willy Wonka. Willy Wonka style. So all the listeners out there, we're hopefully not going to have their eardrums with Gemma not taking part in High Five this time, being the Games Master, but you've just lost your eardrums thanks to that laugh.
Willy Wanker!
Johnny Wanker. Ben.
Yes.
I'm going to lead, even though it's Gemma's feature and she gets to choose who goes next, but it's you. Let's hear what you've got.
This will not surprise you at all, but it's Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas.
Masterpiece. Mm-hmm. Unbelievable film.
Great film.
It was a film that I was always predisposed to like because I love Hunter S. Thompson. I've read pretty much everything he's ever written. And I love Terry Gilliam. I love how quirky and weird his films are. But what they really needed to do when putting this film together was find the right man to take on the character of Hunter S. Thompson. And they couldn't have found a better person than Johnny Depp. He is so magnetic and so believable in this role because he spent time with Hunter. He became friends with Thompson. He went off and lived on his compound for months to get the man's mannerisms down, and he took drugs with him and he drank with him and he went shooting with him, and he became Hunter S. Thompson, and he is so wild and so out there that I can't see past this film. There are other films of his that I absolutely love, but this just lives so large in my memory that it could only be this.
It's so out there. So many actors don't often tend to take a risk like Depp did, especially in the late 80s and 90s. And the payoff was just glorious to watch.
We did it as a rewatch not too long ago.
Yeah.
It's one of the most eye-openers that we've done since we've done the rewatch, where you actually watch a film for so many years after you originally watched it. It must have been 15 years, and it still blew my mind like the first time I ever watched it. And it is down to solely his performance. Mm-hmm. Yes, it's wacky, the colours are mad, it's psychedelic. No other actor in the world could give what he gave. It's mental. It's actually insane. You wonder what he, if he's method actor, how the hell would he go, turn up to set in that frame of mind? It's bizarre.
And the funny thing is, it's rare that you get to see two different versions of a character brought to life to be able to then compare them. So we're saying no one else could do this. Someone else did do this. Bill Murray played Hunter S. Thompson in a film called Where the Buffalo Roam. And we all love Bill Murray. He's a big, big favourite of ours here. But Bill Murray didn't capture Hunter as well as Depp did. You can actually see a comparison there to say Depp nailed it and Murray didn't.
Mm-hmm. That speaks for itself. Yeah. Murray didn't. Depp did. That's it. Yeah. That should be on his gravestone.
Yeah.
That's the biggest highlight and compliment you can ever get.
Very true.
Come on then.
My choice is pre-Jack Sparrow again, and it's Edward D. Wood Jr. from the film Ed Wood.
Very, very good choice.
Yeah.
It's my favourite Tim Burton film, if I'm honest.
Mm. Wow.
Because he plays Ed Wood as this overtly optimistic dreamer who has a can-do attitude. However, this kind of attitude tends to cloud over his judgment of filmmaking, which was very, very poor. If anybody has seen the original Plan 9 from Outer Space knows how much dog shit that film actually is. But despite this lack of self-awareness, he just brings a real heart to the role, and it keeps you on his side throughout the whole movie. You want to see him do well. You want to see him get the success, and you just want to see him succeed, despite the fact that in his personal career, in Edward's career, he never did achieve that kind of stardom. Only until after his death he did. But it's the way how Johnny Depp plays him. There's a scene when he walks into one of his premieres for Bride of the Monster, and there's chaos going over because they're late, the film's not running, and the whole crowd are just like throwing popcorn and just being unruly. However, he walks into the cinema with this wide-eyed wonderment that he's made it. And I love that about Depp in this performance. He's just a positive person that, despite all of everyone telling him that this is terrible, you need to do another take for this, he doesn't care because he's living his dream and he's doing things the way how he wanted to. It's a wonderful performance.
I'm speechless. Yeah. Like, you've summed it up perfectly, and I need to revisit it because Tim Burton at the moment has, I just have this bad taste in my mouth because of the Planet of the Apes and all the shit he's doing now. I forget he did stuff like Ed Wood, and I just need to be reminded of how much of a genius he is.
It's true. I've soured on him because of his recent output has been so poor that I can't remember how good he used to be.
I think this tends to be a forgotten film of Tim Burton's as well, but it's just magnificent.
Do you know what's funny? Something that's just struck me is that Johnny Depp and Robert Downey Jr. have had fairly similar career trajectories, in that when they were first coming up in the 80s, there or thereabouts, they were doing the smaller, low-budget indies, quirky kind of films. And then they both found mainstream success late in life after having their own personal issues and whatnot. But they've then taken that in opposite avenues. So when Downey Jr. got the MCU, got to be Iron Man, he's then used that as a rocket ride to do other things but be well-respected, and he got an Oscar nomination for Tropic Thunder, whereas Johnny Depp's gone the other way and just wants to sell toys to kids. It's weird that they had a very similar path and one has kind of abused it, whereas the other one's used it.
It's depressing, that's what it is. It really is. It is bad. Hopefully one day he'll come out with something decent. I know he did, what was the gangster film he did last year?
Oh, Black Mass.
Yeah, and
it was great.
Oh, it's his return to form, and I watched it and I was like,
He was good in it, but the film itself could have been a lot better.
He's just good.
Joel Edgerton probably outshone him.
When's the last time you saw him in a film that was excellent? Oh my God.
Blimey.
Oh,
shit, when was Donnie Brasco?
Exactly. You know what I mean?
Early 2000s,
On that note, let's go to the good old social media. So, at DanBurden1138 said, the more and more he thinks about it, but it does disturb him. He has to say it is going to be Pirates of the Caribbean, but only the first one.
Fair enough.
It's good and it's justified. At Nightbreed1984, Benny and June. Yes. Great film. Very early as well. At The Sweetie Club have said, definitely Edward Scissorhands. Jack Bird has said, the Tim Burton one.
Which one? Take your pick, mate.
Holly N has said, who's eating Gilbert Grape? Very early film.
That's a good film.
At South Devon Geeks have said, Secret Window, the Stephen King novel.
I've not seen that one.
He's very different in that. To be fair, he does well, and it's not the best story, so I think he does well for what it is. At EILF Movies, The Astronaut's Wife, which I've not seen.
I've never seen
it. Me neither.
And the very final one, which I thought maybe one of us might pick, is from Chris Fastanino, which isn't going to be his name, but it's something like that. Blow.
Do you know, I've never seen that film. I know it's one of his bigger ones. I've never got around to seeing it.
It's unbelievable. And that's one that might restore your love a little bit for him. At least no one said Tusk or Yoga Hoses. Yeah, so except that's something
you.
Good.
Yeah.
Were you expecting me to say that?
Yeah. I'm surprised no one said Donnie Brasco, though, to be honest.
Yeah, it's up there. It's probably my second or third.
Me too, my second.
Right then. I've got a stiffy and I'm going to unzip my jeans.
And you should pick out a name from the box as well.
I need a drum roll. Oh, sounds even better on these mics. This is going to be the hardest one we've ever done.
That's what she
Not
said.
To build it up too much. On the next episode, we'll be mass debating over Daniel Day-Lewis.
Oh, my goodness me. It's rewatch time. On the last episode, it was my pick, and I decided we were going to watch the Darren Aronofsky sports entertainment film The Wrestler, which stars Mickey Rourke, Marissa Tomei, and Evan Rachel Wood. So the story involves an aging wrestler who found popularity in the 1980s, Randy the Ram Robinson, played by Rourke. But however, he must retire following a serious health scare. However, the world is a different place from what he knew in his glory days. From building a relationship with stripper Cassidy, played by Tomei, and estranged daughter Stephanie, played by Rachel Wood, this may be the toughest match in his career. So, this is a film I'm sure that we've all watched at some point in our lives, and of course I know that you guys are very big wrestling fans.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to throw this over to Ben first.
Yeah.
How did you find watching The Wrestler again?
So, to echo what I said at the start of my review of Free Fire, I love, 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 love this film. And I'd forgotten, actually, how much I loved it, because I think I've only seen it twice, maybe, before this week, and I'd forgotten how moving it is and how affecting it is, especially if you understand or have a liking for wrestling. So the first thing I want to compare this to is, have you guys both seen a documentary called Beyond the Mat?
Absolutely.
Yes.
Yeah. So this film reminds me so much of that, especially the Jake the Snake Roberts stuff in that Beyond the Mat documentary about a guy who had these highs of success and then, you know, because of his own demons, be it drink, be it drugs, be it being so driven that he doesn't see his family, that the adulation of the crowd means more to him than the love of his wife and his kids, all those things that drag you down, seeing those then represented in a fictional form after having seen it in documentary form before, it rang so true and felt so real. And we're going to talk about this in more detail, I'm sure, but Mickey Rourke was a revelation.
Mark?
How can I top that?
Come on.
Can you pick me first and then to Ben? Because, you know, I'll slip
today.
You a fiver.
Come on, Mark. Tell us what you thought.
It's no secret how much I love wrestling. Me and Ben went to WrestleMania 29.
We did.
And we also went to SummerSlam last year. So yeah. You know that we have a huge love for the product, but also filmmaking. So to have those two combined is a dream come true.
Mm-hmm.
And it could go so wrong. They could get so much wrong because people aren't just a fan of wrestling. Wrestling is your life. You either don't like wrestling, you think it's all fake and it's for kids, or you love it and you spend thousands of pounds traveling the world like me and Ben.
Yeah. It's real to me, damn
in our
it.
30s going to watch wrestling. Wrestling. And as we are the latter and we absolutely love wrestling, this was something that could be a very big risk, but it didn't fail in any way. Yes, Ben, the documentary and every documentary on the network that we watch, you will think, God, this is a lot like The Wrestler. The Wrestler absolutely nailed it in filmmaking. It made me want to cry my eyes out, which a film about a wrestler who's failed up, and it sounds really harsh, but when you go to Comic-Cons now and you see these failed up movie stars who are signing for £5 and TV stars, that you're like, oh, I think I remember them. I put my kind of mind into them, and I had to do it in this film into a wrestler that had that limelight. And I was sat there watching this film, even though I'd seen it before, wanting to cry and cry for this guy, because I felt like this is real. We could go to a wrestle convention and see some of these washed up wrestlers.
Well, the irony is we did.
So I'm trying to be nice.
There's a scene in this film where Mickey Rourke's character, Randy the Ram Robinson, is at a convention in a little hall in New Jersey. Yeah. Now, Mark and I, when we went to WrestleMania 29, it was in New Jersey and we went to one of these conventions. And to be fair, it was significantly more packed than that one. But there were some guys, Virgil, for example, who was sat on his own with no cue whatsoever, looking really like the woes of the world were upon him. It's so real.
And that's why I think it made me so upset, because I'd seen it in my very own eyes only a few years ago. And I'm sure when we go again, we will be seeing washed up wrestlers charging £5 for a photo. And it's heartbreaking.
Yeah.
But we saw the respect he has. We saw the love he still gets when he goes to that dressing room. And I keep sounding like a broken record, but there's no other person that could do this performance or acting performance like Rourke. And, you know, he's a great actor and he's done some great roles, but this just reminds you of, fuck me, this man deserves Oscars and Oscars and recognition because he can do what the fuck he wants and do it well.
The wrestling world was always sort of drama-packed and full of spandex and, like, amazing athleticism. But back in the day, because I'm going to shock you, listeners, I used to bloody love wrestling. I was very, very into it back when I was a kid. And thinking about when I was a kid, I never thought the repercussions that wrestlers might face. So injury, faded stars. I never thought about that. Of course, as you get older, you realise some things are what they are. And watching this film, it was a real wake-up call. Obviously, following on from documentaries such as Beyond the Mat as well, which is just heartbreaking to watch. This whole film is brutal, unflinching, unapologetic, but it really does kick you in the heart, Nads. It is just a wonderful sports film. I think it's certainly one of the top five sports films that have ever been made.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, just to kind of echo you guys, Rourke is raw.
He's fantastic. And you mentioned, Mark, that you think he should have won Oscars. It pains me that he lost out on the Oscar to Sean Penn.
Mm-hmm.
So he won the BAFTA, he won the Golden Globe, but Sean Penn pipped him to the post for Milk, which I didn't particularly care for, that film. He was robbed. There's a scene in this film where it's after he has the heart attack and he's in the hospital and the doctor comes in and explains to him, you know, you've just had this heart attack, you've just had surgery. And he says, okay, so when can I get back in the gym? And he's like, well, you know, some light exercise, that's fine. He's like, well, no, I'm a professional wrestler. When can I get back out there? Mm. And he went, no, you can't do that anymore. And the look on Rourke's face, because what he'd been told wasn't just you can't wrestle anymore, it was your life is over. This is the only thing he knows. It's the only thing he's ever been any good at. It's the thing that he's dedicated his life to. And this doctor, in a quite cavalier fashion, has just gone, no, you can't do that anymore. It's heartbreaking.
You know, the other thing about that particular scene, the doctor calls him Robin, and he always corrects him and says no money into Randy.
Yeah.
And that's what I took away from that scene. He's not a human. He's a superhuman. He's a hero.
Mm-hmm.
He's not a mere mortal. And being told that, he realises that he's just an ordinary human being. Soul-crushing.
Yeah. And the fact he had sacrificed basically family life, having that dream father and daughter, which everyone grows to want. He had it taken, and out of his own choice, taken away from. His daughter resents him for this. She even says, you know, you had your chance. Do you know even when my birthday is? Because all you think, all you live, all you wake up for is wrestling. You're now taking that away from his life. There's no point in him even getting up in the morning. What else is he going to do with his life? Even when he goes and tries to get a normal job at a delicatessen serving food, he's still being that character, that over the top, hey man, what's up, chucking stuff, and just being that over eccentric kind of wrestling person that would be probably cutting a promo in front of a Sainsbury's delicatessen. But he can't even do a normal day job. His brain doesn't function, and he ends up chopping his fucking thumb off.
Yeah, just so he can get out of there.
Just so he can get out. And you see to yourself, and you kind of relate. We've all worked in retail and it's frustrating, and we all know we don't want to do it because you have to work evenings and weekends, and it sucks. And if anyone's listening is working in retail, I've been there, we've all been there. It's so bad. But for this guy, he's had a taste of being the champion, holding that belt above himself, having thousands of people chanting his name, and he's resorted to cutting six pieces of bloody meat for someone for $2.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The interesting thing about that as well is that the character of Randy is a man who's clearly past his best. His prime was the 80s, which is why the casting of Rourke was so important, because it's true of him. Mickey Rourke was a guy who had his greatest successes in the 80s and then through the 90s and the early 2000s really didn't do anything. His first hit or first hint of anything towards having a career again was Sin City. But to get this, a proper meaty role, It was the perfect casting, especially because the person they cast... Do you know who they cast initially in this role?
Corey Feldman.
Nick Cage.
Sadly, it wasn't Corey Feldman, Mark. He would have been perfect, though. But you're acting as if Corey is no longer the big star he once was. Clearly, you haven't listened to Angelic to the Core, the latest record by Corey Feldman. And the hit single Go For It.
Ascension Millennium, come on.
But Gemma's absolutely right. It was Nicolas Cage.
Are you kidding me, really?
It was Nicolas Cage. Wow. And it would have been too over the top. Yeah. It wouldn't have worked. It would have been funny as hell, but it wouldn't have worked because Mickey was absolutely the right person to do it. And the other thing is he's actually pretty good in the ring.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, you know, the grand irony of wrestling, because, you know, wrestling's fake, is you can't fake being a wrestler. You can't fake throwing yourself over the top rope and landing hard on the ground. You can't fake cutting your forehead with a razor blade to get colour. You can't fake these things. It is a skill that has to be taught and has to be learned like anything else. And it's hard. We know from being wrestling fans of old, all three of us, how many wrestlers have failed to make it to the big time because they just weren't very good, they weren't entertaining, they didn't sell the moves, etc. Mickey Rourke looked really solid. He looked like a guy who'd been doing this for years. Admittedly, it was choreographed, so he was only doing basic moves, clotheslines and so on, but he was doing a few things like Hurricane Ranas, top rope suicide dives, and he looked legit. At no point did I think, oh, it's some Hollywood dude playing at wrestling. He looked like a legit wrestler.
And for his age,
yeah,
that's mm-hmm. what I expect Jericho to be doing in 10 years. He'd mm-hmm. still be pulling off those moves in that kind of fashion. Not yeah. too much, not too much work, not too much cardio, just pulling off the moves. And you're exactly right. That could have been a pro wrestler and I wouldn't have known.
Yeah.
And how about that hardcore match scene?
Oh my God.
Because if anybody here, I'm sure there's a lot of wrestling fans that listen to this podcast, but there's also going to be some that goes, yeah, wrestling's fake. I love the fact that they kind of interjected the scenes of the match along with the scenes after the match when he's being attended by the EMTs, taking the staples out of his skin, mm-hmm. sewing up the gashes that he got from like getting a window smashed across his head.
Yeah, that was a great bit of cross-cutting. Some really interesting editing showing the actual match and the aftermath. It's showing how you're entertaining the fans 1 minute, but what really happens to you afterwards. And the person who was wrestling in that match was a guy called Necro Butcher, who is a legit hardcore wrestler. And you know, Rourke actually did these. He didn't have stuntmen. He did these matches. He really did this.
That dollar bill that's into his head, goodness. And when he removes that staple from the staple gun, that actually made me feel quimsy.
That is definitely not a word. You're thinking of the word queasy, maybe?
Queasy, yes, and quim.
Queasy.
It made me feel very faint. It was horrible, yeah. Absolutely disgusting. And that was back in, you know, we've all seen this back in, they don't do it much in WWE now, but we did see those matches where there was Cactus Jack having numbers
hardcore
of pins
Holly.
Into his head and all these horrible moves. Yeah. But seeing it there, it was too realistic.
Yeah. But I just like the fact they included that, though, because yeah. it shows this whole persona that Randy presented. He wanted to have the adoring fans shouting his name and saying, you're just the best. But behind the scenes, none of these fans would have imagined the amount of pain that he put mm-hmm. his body through, that physicality, which ultimately leads to the heart attack.
Yeah. Ooh.
Should we talk about some other characters? Yeah.
Mickey's no, had his, I just want to talk about Mickey.
He's had his moment. So let's talk about Cassidy, the beautiful, incredible kind of lap dancer that we see that is in still part of his life. Can you pronounce, please, the actress?
Marissa Tomei.
Thank you very much.
I wanted to see your
It's all right, we'll get him to say Darren Aronofsky later.
I did love this character, and I think she's up there with Rourke as giving a performance of a lifetime. Really heartfelt. You felt for her because the only way she was going to make a living is doing a job that no one really wants to do, but she's going by, she's being that horrible piece of meat that people are shouting at, and Mickey's in love with her. He absolutely is besotted with her. And I'm not being crude or degrading, but
here we go. He's about to be crude and degrading.
She's beautiful.
Yeah.
Oh, all right.
And her body's fantastic. And for her age, I think she's very, very stunning to look at.
Which is why I don't think she was entirely the right casting for this film. As brilliant as she is, I love Marissa Tomei and she's great in this. They wanted to make her a parallel character to Randy the Ram, someone else who is past their best still having to do this because it's the only thing they know, the only way they can make money. And that would work if Marissa Tomei really did look in her early 40s as she was then, but she doesn't. Marissa Tomei looks 15 years younger than she is and she's absolutely gorgeous. They should have got a more haggard actress to actually sell what they were trying to sell.
Madonna.
She can't act.
Yeah. They used to be a real life couple as well, Madonna and Rourke. I don't think that would have gone down well.
Really?
Yeah.
Bloody hell.
But she's spellbinding. And she,
oh,
again,
she's wonderful.
Again, it's that heart. And I think this is what draws me to the film, which I watched twice for the rewatch. She's so... You attach to her because you want to see her succeed in life as well. You see her supporting her kid. And like you said, the only way she's going to be able to do that is by taking her clothes off for men that really do not give one monkey shit about her.
I'd love to be attached to her, to be honest with you. She's stunning. I think she's absolutely gorgeous. Yeah.
But she was just the perfect balance for Rourke. She just had that beautiful warmth about her. She was nominated for Best Supporting Actress at the Oscars, which unfortunately she did not get. But
shunned again.
The interesting thing, though, I really like the fact that she was nominated for an Oscar for this, and also she was nominated for a film called In the Bedroom, because those two things kind of prove the point that when she won the Oscar for My Cousin Vinny, it wasn't a fluke. Everyone claimed that Jack Palance read the wrong name off the thing, which of course would never happen. No one would
not
ever
in
do
the Oscars,
that.
Oh, no, never.
Definitely not. But he didn't. That was the name that was on the thing. She genuinely won it. And I like the fact that since then she's proved the detractors wrong by doing work as strong as this.
So the next character is Evan Rachel Wood, who plays the
Evan.
Daughter.
Evan. Evan.
I'd call my kid Evan. Who plays his daughter Stephanie.
Powerhouse.
Now, you loved this character, didn't you?
Absolute powerhouse. The rawness she displays when she rejects Randy's character when he stands her up. I don't think you're ever going to find a more honest and more heartbreaking scene than Evan Rachel Wood displaying this. She's just, you feel that pain, you feel the hurt, you feel like you were rejected by your own father who was trying to build bridges with you. She didn't get any recognition for this role either. She's going on to bigger and better things now with a recurring role in Westworld. If anybody wants to know just how good this actress is, watch this. I mean, she's only in it for probably about, 10, 15 minutes?
Yeah, she's
on
in
screen time?
She's in, I think, three scenes.
But again, I think that represents how Randy has not been there for her as she's growing up. She's absent to us, so how are we to really know what their relationship's like? We're only seeing it from Randy's point of view.
Until this movie, I'd only seen her in a film called 13, which I bought
at
uni.
Film.
And she was incredible in that. And it was nice to see her again, because I thought, there'd been quite a few years until we'd seen her on screen again. But knowing that she's doing Westworld now is decent to know that people are still giving her attention, because I thought in this film, like you said, 15 minutes, that's all she's in it. But she was up there with the rest of them, so good on her.
She was absolutely brilliant. And again, she leads to one of the most heartbreaking things in the film, where Mickey Rourke's character, he's finally managed to get her back on side. She doesn't really want to speak to him, but he manages to encourage her and says, you know, let's go out and have dinner. And then he doesn't show up because he ends up sleeping with what is known in the business as a ring rat and then getting high on coke and not turning up for this meeting. And that's the interesting thing about this film. He can never not be himself. That's his downfall. He is Randy the Ram Robinson. He is not Robin Ramzinski. He's, as Gemma says, he gave up that character. He became Randy the Ram. And if that means leaving your family behind because you're too busy shagging ring rats, if that means going into this 20-year anniversary match with the Ayatollah where you might die, even though the stripper who you love is in the room and imploring you to leave and not put yourself through it and come and be with her, but he still had to be himself. He couldn't not be Randy the Ram.
It's a drug, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, it's depressing. And what do we think to the very final scene then? So we see this very last moment. He's winning the match. He's up on the turnbuckle. He stands up. He raises his arms. And then it's the end.
Cried my bloody eyes out.
Are you satisfied with that ending?
Yes.
That's
exactly
what I want.
Me too, because I wouldn't want to know. If he lands it, gets the pin, 1, 2, 3, and walks out and gets the girl, it'd be too much of a pat, easy ending. If he outright dies, it'd be too heartbreaking. I kind of like that it cuts to black when he's in midair, and then that's it.
You see it in his face. Mm-hmm. You see the tears rolling down. He knows this is this final moment in Earth, but he's surrounded by love, and that's all he ever wanted.
Can you imagine Damien Chazelle direct this film? He would have then had him walking out, holding hands, skipping down the road
dancing.
With the belt, Vince McMahon coming, hey, will you sign me again? And then it cuts to him actually just holding his heart on the bottom of the ring like Jerry Kinglaw.
Ring full of nails and broken glass and other things.
I'm glad you both like that, because it gets a criticism. A lot of people say, I hate the ending, because you never know what happens. No. It's like, well, you do. You just think for yourself.
Sometimes
exactly.
Don't have your cake and eat it.
Yeah.
Just have a bite and go, yeah, all right.
Before we wrap this up, let's talk about Aronofsky, because I am a huge mark for Darren Aronofsky's work. I think he's one of the best directors in the game. And this film is fantastic. It has a real grainy film stock look. It looks like a documentary, which is entirely appropriate, because as we say, it's a lot like Beyond the Mat. There's a lot of handheld camera work. It follows Randy down, you know, curving hallways towards the arenas. It follows him down hallways towards the deli counter at the supermarket. And in fact, there's one brilliant shot that I love. It's when you see Randy walking through the back way of the supermarket, and as he's walking towards the curtain that leads you through to the deli counter, you hear the crowd roar, and it's ram, 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 and it's kind of juxtaposing that with, you know, the kind of hallways he'd walk through to these big arenas in the 80s at Madison Square Garden. But that's how far he's fallen.
It takes Brilliant away shot. The 80s sheen of success that you would see in old WWF videos, mm-hmm. and now you have this cold, unrelentless, harsh reality of today. So clever.
Yeah.
I need to check out more of his work. Obviously, I've seen Black Swan. I've seen this. I've seen Requiem for a Dream. But there's so much more that I need to get my
head. Try Pie as well. Yeah. That's a great film.
You can look at my stomach. I've had a lot of pie. Hey! Yeah, I will check out a lot more of his stuff. And I'm not going to try and pronounce his name. So really.
Go on.
Do it.
I've got to read it again. Darren Aronofsky.
Yeah,
it's all right.
Kind of.
It will do.
The space was unnecessary, but never mind. It's okay.
Let's score this, yeah?
Shall we? Go on, Ben. You give it first dibs.
I love Darren Aronofsky. I love this film. I love wrestling. I love the fact that you saw a lot of current WWE stars in the background. We saw Cesaro with hair in the background.
Crazy.
You know, it's great. It's 9 out of 10 for me.
Mark?
Everything he said, 9 out of 10. It's simple as that.
Me too, 9 out of 10.
We're so boring, we need to stop disagreeing
we
more.
We need to mix it up. However, the wrestler does get a skip to the end, 9 out of 10. So, rewatch time is now Ben's choice.
Yeah, so of late we've been doing a lot of great films. We've gone away from doing the shit films, which is nice. We'll have a break from that. But what we've not done again so much is controversial films. I think the last one we did was Crash. Mm-hmm. So I want to do another film that was really, really controversial when it came out. It was a film that came out in 1995 about a group of hedonistic youths in New York City. And Gemma is just having a conniption fit.
So excited.
What is it? Go and tell them.
Is it Kids?
It is Kids. Oh-ho-ho! So next time we're going to watch Kids.
This is it. It's the last round of our increasingly popular game that you're all talking about. It's High Five.
High five.
I am sad to see this go, guys. How do you feel about it?
Yeah.
It's one of those things that, like, you're in the British office ended. You always wanted more. And that's the way I think we look at this. We could go on and do it for 10 episodes, but it would go very thin and very unfunny.
Yeah.
So we go out while we're kings.
This is very like the BAFTA and Golden Globe winning British Office. So what we will do in 10 years' time is I'll come back and do a spin-off that's just me, not with you or the
characters.
Yeah,
we won't be involved at all.
It'll go to Netflix. It won't be anywhere near as good and everyone should feel ashamed of themselves.
So let's try our best not to go down that road.
We're not going to.
So for those of you who have not heard of this game before, but I'm going to tell you the rules anyway. So we've got Team Barky Bark, Mark and Ben, fused together. And we've got in the pot 10 famous movie quotes. So what Ben and Mark are going to do is work as a team, and they're going to take it in turns to pick out a quote, read it out, and the other person's going to have to guess the name of the film and the name of the character who said the quote. Did I mention there's going to be a bit of helium involved?
Oh,
just a bit.
Oh, there we go. So they're going to take a big old puff of a balloon with helium in, and they're going to say the said quote. They're going to get 1 point for each correct answer. So that's the name of the film and the character who said the quote. So if they ask to listen to the quote for a second time, then they're going to get half a point for each answer. So it means they'll get a maximum of 1 point. We've got Ron, our very dear friend of the podcast, who's going to be supervising it. How's it going, Ron?
I've got some bad news, guys.
What?
Ron's dead.
You're shitting me.
Yeah.
Oh,
on the last episode, he loved the game. He went home to show his wife, did the whole helium thing, and died.
Oh, you're joking me.
Just another statistic.
It's a good job, though, that we've got his twin brother, Don, here.
Oh, that's why I didn't clock him.
You know the guy who's been watching you the whole episode,
yeah.
Rubbing his leg? That's Don.
Yeah.
Horny Don, they call him.
How are we, Horny Don?
I'm okay, thank you.
Yeah. Are we all right with the whole helium? I know your brother died of it, but putting that aside, are we okay with the helium
thing? The funeral's tomorrow, but okay. I'm happy for you to keep on doing it.
I didn't ask you for your life story, pal. Are we all right with the helium?
You go for it. High five.
Thank you.
I don't know why he's from another country either. Like, Ron was the most English guy you would ever hear. No, but
sounds like he's from South Africa. So, Ben, do you want to pick a name out of the old pot there?
Oh, why the hell not? Let's do this. Right, I'm going to take a big huff.
They're eating her, and then they're going to eat me. Oh, my God!
I thought you said they're eating his hair. I need it again because I don't. Can't remember, dude.
We're halving the points.
They're eating her, and then they're going to eat me. Oh my god!
You sound like Harry Potter in the early films when his balls hadn't dropped. I'm going to shit the bed, dude. I don't know.
I wouldn't have got that either. It's Arnold in Troll 2.
Oh, yeah, that one. You're screwing us.
Good start, the whole...
You mentioned Troll 2.
Just because we're doing the rest, you can't do the screw job on us.
Come on.
It's Montreal all over again.
God damn. Can you see this? We should be, you know, we said we'd all for fun and do nice quotes. Yeah.
I've already had half a balloon. I think I've gone too big too soon.
Don't do a Ron.
Tina, you fat lard. Come get some dinner. Tina, eat food. Eat the food. Gosh.
It is Napoleon Dynamite, and I assume it's Napoleon himself.
Well done. Woo! Yes. 2 points.
I found that if you hold the end not too hard and just release it slowly, it's easier to take all in.
That's what she said.
Get away from her, you bitch!
I'm not going to ask you to do it again, but aww, I don't know it. So do it again.
Get away from her, you bitch!
You sound so sassy.
I'm going to have a guess, but I don't know it.
Oh, fucking hell, gone lightheaded.
You actually still got it in you. That's what he said. Predator.
Oh,
incorrect.
On the right kind of lines.
Yeah.
Oh, Terminator.
Ripley and Aliens.
Oh, yeah. Shit on a bed.
Any bed in particular?
Get away from you, bitch. Yeah, I might do the whole thing.
Here's Johnny.
So that would be Jack Torrance in The Shining.
Ayo. Incredible. 4 points, dude.
Indeed.
I'm letting the side down big time.
Okay. Here comes the huff.
Warriors, come out to play.
That's the creepiest thing ever.
I'm going to be playing that one back again and again. So I'm in two minds. I kind of enjoyed it that much. I want to hear it again. But I also want to get some good score. So the film's The Warriors.
Yeah.
Yep.
But I don't know the character. Can I just say one of the Warriors? John.
Oh, it was Luther.
Oh, 1 point's still okay.
Yeah, 1 point's great. You're on 5 points. You
that
guys can do this.
So good.
It's going to hurt.
This is Sparta.
Okay, so the film is 300.
Yes.
And I want to say it's Leonidas or Leonidas.
He's got yes! it. He's got it. Two extra points. You are now on 7 points. Right, so at the moment, you guys have got 7 points.
I think we can do this,
dude. I think you guys can
do this.
Let's
have it.
So let's have the next quote.
Yeah.
I know we said it was all about fun and not about the scoring, but I kind of want to win.
Me too. And also, no pressure, Mark, but it'd be nice if you got one right.
How is your back from carrying me?
You'll get this one.
Even more pressure.
To infinity and beyond!
Toy Story, yeah. Buzz Lightyear.
Correct.
Yes! Well done!
You're being nicer now. The first quote was terrible.
What? Says the guy who gave me The Devil Wears Prada on week one.
Yeah, okay, touche.
There we go.
So what, points are we on 9?
You're on 9 points. Yes, you've got fair. Two to draw, but 3 to take it all.
I feel a bit lightheaded. Don, was that one of the symptoms?
It's very bad. My brother died from same thing.
So now he's Indian, I think. But,
where are you from, Don? I'm from Scandinavia.
Brilliant.
So there we go. God.
I drink your milkshake. Drink it up.
That is Daniel Plainview in There Will Be Blood.
We've equalised. It's all 11.
It's 11.
All right. It's not Stranger Things. So we've got two, Ben. We could shit the bed, and I'd hate a draw.
It'd be terrible. Let's win it outright, man.
Because we don't know what to do as a tiebreaker. We genuinely don't. First one not to die, you can take the most in.
Let's do it. What, the balloon, I hope?
Degrading Gemma. Family show.
Okay, you ready?
A boy's best friend is his mother.
Oh, shit.
That's
the Gemma Lash from Bear. Nicely done. It's Gemma from Skip to the End.
Oh.
Is it Psycho?
It is.
Norman Bates.
Correct.
Yes! No, you just take the lead!
You're just doing it for funsies now. Come on. The last one. Let's make it a good one.
And so I can get it right.
It's going to be a good one.
Now, I'm pretty sure I've got a perfect score so far today.
Ben's won this.
So I'd like to not shit the bed.
We are a team. This is no individual.
But Ben, you've won this.
I'm going to finish the balloon, all right?
Go on.
I've had it with these motherfucking snakes on this motherfucking plane!
The thing is, I don't think he'll know the character.
I don't know the character. It is Snakes on a Plane, but bearing in mind that Samuel L. Jackson always plays himself, the character was Samuel L. Jackson. Give me the points.
Oh, why not? It's the last game. Barky Bark wins by 15 points. Woo! Well done, lads. Well done.
Hooray!
So, on that epic conclusion, the winners are Barky Bark. Ben and Mark, how do you feel?
Pretty good.
Unbelievable.
And that concludes the sad end of High Five. But my guy, what a time we've had.
Will we reveal anything at this point, or shall we just say that the next episode will have a brand new game?
I think we should just say brand new game.
We'll have a brand new game in 2 weeks' time.
Oh.
And I'm still a bit sort of... See you in 2 weeks.
It's now time for some good old-fashioned listener questions. So let's start with Firestorm Breeze, who said, what are your thoughts on the Episode 8 trailer and poster? He must mean Star Wars, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
It's the right amount of information right now. Let's not overkill it. Let's not put this, that and the other in. It's perfect.
I didn't dig the trailer. I didn't think it gave us enough. The opposite of Gemma, to be honest. I don't think it told us enough. It was all fart and no shit for me. The poster I rather liked, and there's a lot of good memes going out there of people who've used a bit of Photoshop trickery to make the poster better in their own way. So go and check out some of those. But yeah, I like the poster, but not so much the trailer.
Yeah, I love the poster. I can imagine that poster still looking great in 10, 15 years. It's a classic one. I can imagine it, Ben, on your wall just there. So when it's your birthday in August, I'll sort it out for you, get you a nice frame poster. And the trailer, it's just a little tease, isn't it? It's just like slipping a finger on the nipple. It's not quite going any further, but it's just enough to make me want to wait for the next bit on around a few months' time.
Okay, next question.
Lee Johnson has said, have you guys genuinely seen any film at the cinema more than 3 times in the last 10 years?
More than 3 times?
Yeah.
I've seen films 3 times, but not more than
What's the ones you've seen 3 times?
Force Awakens I saw 3 times.
Nice.
I saw Thor 3 times.
It's a shame you didn't see that 4 times.
Brilliant. speaking of trailers, though, the trailer for Thor Ragnarok was wild.
Oh, my God.
Absolutely brilliant. The best trailer I've seen in years.
There's also a little hint of a Taika Waititi film, Hunt for the Wilder People, in there. Skuck's Life. It's in, I think, probably the first 5 seconds when Thor's throwing his hammer and Hela catches it. Right in the background, you're seeing graffiti Skuck's Life. So anybody who's seen that film, whee.
Wow.
I was genuinely in stitches when he's in the arena and the Hulk comes out and he goes, yes, I know him. He's my friend from work. Genius.
It's the best trailer I've seen for a long time.
Amazing.
And I know how much you love those films more than most of the Marvel films. So.
The second Thor film wasn't great, but I just love that character. And Chris Hemsworth is so good.
Amazing.
I think Cate Blanchett is going to rule them all in terms of villainry.
She looks unreal in that. And I've heard a rumour that she's going to end up being Thanos's girlfriend. So she's then going to have a bigger role in things like Avengers Infinity War and so on.
Wow. Mm-hmm. And what did you think about the news this week about Josh Brolin being cast in as Cable?
I think he's loving his comic book movies right now, isn't
he? He's doing pretty damn good.
Dipping his toe into all the big arenas.
I like Josh Brolin. I think he's going to contribute very well.
any film you've seen Chandler
three
times? Oh, yeah,
and that as well.
You could say that you've seen The Room three times, because you
have. I have seen The Room three times. I went to see it the other week at the Electric Cinema in Birmingham. Always and forever, and that film will never, ever, ever get old.
Ben's going to tear me an absolute new one.
Oh, God, it's going to be Clerks, isn't it?
Yoga Hosers, because I stayed around for Kevin Smith to do the Q&A, watched it again, and then I watched it again with a mate.
And you didn't commit suicide?
I'm still here. So, yeah.
That should be like one of the taglines on Yoga Hosers posters. I'm still here.
Sat through it three times, and I'm still here.
Just... Callum James has said, was there a movie that traumatised you as a child?
I'll tell you what I found rather traumatic. The whole film, not so much, but one particular element was Ghostbusters 2, Viggo.
Yeah.
Viggo, man, he's just, it's just because he was an ugly motherfucker. He had that ugly face and that balding head and, yeah, I didn't like him.
Willy Wonka in a Chocolate Factory, when they go into the tunnel on the boat and then it goes completely trippy, LSD, psychedelic bullshit kind of... Willy Wonka just goes creepy. And it, I still can't watch it without feeling uncomfortable.
Old-time listeners will know that E.T. was quite traumatising to my
no,
bumhole.
No, really? Yeah.
But arachnophobia. I absolutely hate spiders. Oh, yeah. And then seeing that film when they actually used real spiders in a house where you could... That's something that could happen. You're going to live in Australia. You are going to probably get eaten by a spider.
Maybe not in Kettering.
No. Maybe in Nuneaton. Chris, which is at... Keels 811, what's one of those songs that is so overused in films that you get very annoyed? His is Gimme Shelter by The Stones.
Yeah. One that gets used a lot in TV, not so much film, but in TV a lot, is Fix You by Coldplay.
Oh, God.
Fix You, Fuck You.
Any charity appeal for Oxfam or something. You have a little kid starving and that playing. Yeah. That is the one. London's Calling by The Clash seems to be on everything.
Really?
And Sweet Home Alabama is on everything. Yeah. Absolutely everything. We have a Hulk podcast have said, would you guys consider now following up with Low Five on sulfur hexafluoride? So we literally...
That would be a very different...
let's speak to Don first and see if that's doable.
Ian Evans has said, Alan Partridge once spent a whole bank holiday watching all of the Bond films back to back.
Nobody does it better.
Stop getting Bond wrong.
There she is, swinging on a Luger. Totally Billy Bollocks.
What was that? Too late. Sorry.
Guess what the question is. What franchise would you spend your bank holiday watching?
Oh, Godfather.
And you're not allowed Star Wars.
Godfather.
Nice.
Very good, very good.
I would pick Indiana Jones, even though the fourth one is absolute eye rape. I would still put myself through it to get the original free.
The MCU movies.
Yes.
Yeah. I like sitting through those. They're nice, light, fun things to watch on a long bank holiday weekend.
Nice. Declan Hayes has said, you find your perfect life partner in life.
As opposed to your life partner in death. Yeah.
But they admit to you they don't like Jaws.
How are they your perfect life partner then?
Exactly.
That's Blockbusters.
Get out.
Which university did you go to? I went to the University of Life.
Oh, I like this question a lot. Movie Geek Cast have said, if you could repeat any day of your life like they do in Groundhog Day, which day would you choose? Lame as this sounds, and it's me gushing over Ben again, but probably when we went to New York, I was with my dad, I was with Ben, we got near enough ringside for SummerSlam, and we had just an amazing day.
Yeah.
And it didn't cost us nothing. It was just the sun was out, we got to meet the wrestlers, we got to have pizza, and just... you know, that's
right. We'd never had pizza before. It was this new thing.
It was bread and this
with cheese, tomato puree. Oh my lord.
It's a taste sensation.
It was a revelation.
We're going to go back just so we can have it again.
I've heard they do it in this country now.
Nah, not yet. It won't be the same. But that was. There was something special about that day, man.
It was the garlic
the
bread.
The crust. But no, it wasn't it? There was something special about just being there and just... It was just amazing.
Yeah.
It was an unbelievable day. Failing that Download Festival because Ben and Benny were there and we had just the best day of our life. The bands were amazing, but it will be top this year with the lineup.
Yeah.
So
see, I would say Download because the day when we were there and we saw Black Sabbath, one of the greatest bands of all time. We went backstage and we met Chino Moreno from Deftones, who's one of our heroes. Do. We had pizza.
We didn't. We never had that. Only once.
Probably seeing The Room at the Prince Charles Cinema.
That's incredible. I love the fact your boyfriend will be listening to me. Oh, she's going to say when she met me.
No, because I know what I know what's going to happen. If I say, because in my head, I did want to say, the day I met my boyfriend. I
that
know
is
you
so
would have gone,
ugh. Oh, I would have edited it out anyway.
But I did spend it with my boyfriend, and we, I don't think we had pizza that day, though, I'm afraid.
Damn. You wouldn't. You weren't in America once a year.
But seeing the actual real life Tommy Wiseau in person and understanding exactly his mystique and his aura and being in a room full of people who absolutely adore The Room and listen to all the great heckles, that day is never going to be replayed again. It's just wonderful.
Martin Street, who is this generation's Brat Pack?
I think they've kind of stopped doing shit together now, but there was a time when it was Ben Stiller, Vince Vaughn, Owen Wilson, Luke Wilson. There was that little clan who were doing movies together all the time.
The only one I can think of at the moment, it's not even a pack, it's just a duo, would be Gosling and Stone, because they're working so well together. So add a few more in with those guys, and that would be great. But The Stiller Man, that was a great one. But like you said, they weren't funny anymore.
No. And then, I suppose now you've got Seth Rogen, his cronies, Jonah Hill, Michael Cera, Jay Baruchel.
Yeah.
Jonas Hill, mate. Come on.
Sorry, Jonas Hill.
And Seth Rogen.
Yeah. Oh, God, yeah. So, Ben, did you see this week that there's a new Adam Sandler film that someone on our Twitter was talking about? And
Sandy
they
Wexler.
Watched it, and it's
seen
the worst
it.
Film.
It's on Netflix, isn't it?
Yeah, it's supposed to be.
I will watch it, because I will always watch. I've watched the other two that he's done on Netflix, and they were atrocious. I will watch it. It's had the best reviews of the three that he's put on Netflix, but that's not saying a lot.
Is that like 4 out of 10 rather than 1 out of 10?
Yeah, it got on the AV Club, whose opinion I tend to trust, it got B-. Which I suppose is as good as you can expect from Sandler these days. He's got B- written all over him, isn't he? Adam B- Sandler.
It's something to aspire to.
And they're going
to
give him another 10 deal. You know they are because of the success.
They have. They've extended it a couple of weeks ago.
What?
Yeah.
How many?
I think it's another 6. So he's still got 3 more on his original deal plus a further 6.
My God.
Yeah. They've clearly got money to burn, haven't they, Netflix, though?
Which is good because we still get stuff like Stranger Things and now Better Call Saul and stuff like that. But it's... Next question, Craig, which is @Craig_Furlough. Hopefully I've got it right. If I haven't, you're pretty much close. What was the last film Eddie Murphy really shone in? Norbit. Do you know what the worst thing is? I can't think. That's tragic.
I suppose you'd have to take the Shrek films out of it, because he's not really doing much other than voice acting. In terms of live action roles... Christ.
Coming to America, maybe?
I'm not scraping the barrel there, are you,
Gemma? Yeah, we are probably going back to the 80s, aren't we? Oh, no, he did a film with Steve Martin that I think was either in the late 90s
Bowfinger.
Or the early... Yeah, Bowfinger, I like that. Mm. But that was probably 20 years ago. Yeah.
He got a lot of recognition for Dreamgirls.
Which I've never seen.
I never will.
No.
I'm going to the West End show next week, 2 weeks, I think.
Oh, cool.
Good for you.
Yeah. I'm going to the doctor's next Thursday. Yeah, and I've got my opticians on the Friday. I just want to let you know. Yeah,
amazing.
I've got an ingrown toenail.
Next week, find out what Gemma likes for a cereal.
Says the guy whose mind was blown by eating pizza.
It was unbelievable, man. You weren't there, man.
What good pizza.
Alex, which is Things I've Found. Oh, this is a very good question. Whose portrayal of a superhero or villain has been best to date? Superhero Iron Man, it's got to be Robert Downey Jr. I think he nailed it.
I think you kind of have to separate hero and villain, don't you? Villain, for me, it's Loki. It's Hiddleston as Loki is the best. Hero, in fact, I would say that it was Hugh Jackman as Wolverine. He's been brilliant as Wolverine for 18 years or whatever it is, but especially in Logan recently. Fantastic.
Chris Hemsworth or Chris Pratt?
Just Chris. And
Chris.
If you're Chris
Evans,
you're
any of the Chris's, they're all good.
If your name's Chris, then it's a thumbs up from me.
Chris Akabusi's in the new one.
Yeah, it's Chris Akabusi!
Bodney76, will the Fast and Furious franchise ever end?
Let's hope so.
Please, for the love of Christ, yes.
Now we've not reviewed it, I reckon it will take a bit of a dip in the sales and the kind of overall revenue. So I think surely, because what I like about it is when, you know, the death of Paul, which was really, really sad, they they respected him and didn't do any more. So that's what I like. I'm glad they didn't release another.
Especially because they came out and said, this will be the last one, we won't do any more. And they've stuck to that. I like how they really respected his death and didn't, you know, choose commerce over the death of their friend. I really love that.
I like that. Yeah. So it's a silly question. They ended it, didn't they, at 7?
Yeah,
no teat from the cash cow needed to be milked.
Brilliant. Very final question.
We've gone very Radio 4 all of a sudden.
Yes.
You're listening to Skip to the End.
Kieran Brown has said, he's just bought the book of 1001 Films You Should Watch Before You Die. Have any of you read it, or how many have you seen?
Well, the answer to the first question is no. So the answer to the second question is I don't know.
I've seen it because it looks like the ultimate coffee table book. It's incredible. But you know that no one's going to watch some of them that are like number 786, one of these really old Romanian movies that you have to see. I'm not going to watch it.
I did something similar. I went through the IMDb top 250 and I'd seen something appalling like 70, which isn't a lot really.
We've got a couple of minutes here, Ben, you're working your way through Kevin Smith's backlog at the moment.
Sadly, yeah.
But none of those actually made the list of 250 top IMDb movies of all time.
There is a surprise.
But how's it going?
Yeah, so I don't know if it's trying to get into your mindset, Mark, which is a very dark and dangerous place to be, or if it's just an act of self-abuse, but I've been going through all of Kevin Smith's films. So far I've watched Clerks, which I'd never seen before, and it's fucking terrible. It's one of the worst, most poorly made pieces of shit I've ever seen.
So what do you really think?
Yeah. Then I watched Mallrats, which I'd seen before, and I hated, and second time round I hated it slightly less.
That's good, that's positive.
It wasn't as bad, and I really like the former Scientologist, what's his name?
Jason Lee. Brody.
Yeah, Brody. I really enjoyed him. Then I watched, what was the third one?
Chasing Amy.
The first half, I really enjoyed it. It was really laugh out loud funny. The writing reminded me of Dogma. And then the second half got soppy as all shit. And Ben Affleck has never been more punchable than he is in that film. So it kind of ruined it towards the end, but I kind of enjoyed that.
And you know that you love Dogma.
I know that I love Dogma. So what's the next one? Would it be Jay and Silent Bob Strikes Back?
I thought it was Jersey Girl. Wouldn't it?
Christ. Go with Jay and Silent Bob Strikes Back.
No, I'm doing them all in order. Okay. I'm doing them all in order.
Jersey Girl, Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back. Then we get Red State. Oh, it's going to be good. Clerks 2, really. You know.
Like a nosedive.
Keep your questions coming. The best way to get in contact with us is on skiptotheend.co.uk, because on there we've got links to Twitter, Instagram, Facebook and email. So keep them coming and we'll answer them all again in 2 weeks' time.
So that brings us to the end of another episode of the Skip to the End podcast. And it was a beaut. I had so much fun today.
I don't want it to end.
I don't want it to end.
It's annoying that we can't do like 4-hour episodes.
Yeah, I want to carry on.
We could, but no one would listen.
They might, but yeah, I like 2 hours is about right, I think.
Yeah, minimum.
Should we start doing director's cuts? So we put out the 2 hour and then we do an extra hour at the end.
Available now for $9.99.
Or the director's commentary of the podcast, they just hear us talk.
Actually, talking about money, right, I just want to get something out there, right? Mm. I see a lot of tweets and stuff. We've never made one penny from this podcast, which people don't believe, which is crazy.
Even the t-shirts, the money that people have spent buying the t-shirts goes back into a fund for us to make more t-shirts.
To make more at Christmas. Yeah. But another thing I want to say is we're never going to charge for this podcast. No. I see people plugging Patreon and saying, why don't you jump on board? You could make thousands and get sponsorship and start plugging stuff. It's like, we want to keep it as this little project that's our release from when we do a shitty job and we finish and we go, well, I'm going to meet my mates now and do something fun. And that's how we're going to keep it. So if you want to send us money, that's awesome.
We won't say no.
But episodes are never going to be charged for. Yeah. And it's risky because in a few years it might be like, brought to you by Coca-Cola. Skip to the end. But I would hope that, you know, people realise that we do it for fun and we've never made money and we never will. And when we do, we get keyrings made. And when we get free mics, we benefit and we just get better equipment and prizes for you guys. It's a big thing, but I've just seen a few tweets where they're like, you must be minted. Nope.
Not a single bloody penny.
And we'll never plug stuff just to get free stuff.
No, what's this brothers has gone down really well, though.
That's it. Episode 70 now.
Episode 70.
Should we do something big?
I don't know. It's not really an anniversary, is it? 70. It's just a nice round number.
Should we celebrate by seeing probably the biggest release from James Gunn and the biggest, most anticipated film in the last 5 years?
I'm interested.
Yeah.
And do you know what, though? It's a nice little bookend to what we've been doing all these years, because our first review was Guardians of the Galaxy.
That's crazy. Our very first episode. Yeah. You weren't even born then. This is 2.5 years
just
ago.
A bambino.
That's nice, though, isn't it? Maybe we should call it a day on the next. Our last ever episode is episode 70.
Yeah.
Should we build it as that? And then when people listen, we're like, not really.
So it's like the 8 times that Ric Flair retired.
Yeah. What else have we got then?
Well, we've got so much stuff. So it is my rewatch. We're going to do a controversial film from the 90s called Kids, which if you've not seen it, wow, go out and get a copy of that. If you have seen it, watch it again.
And tweet us and let us know your thoughts, because I love seeing what people get out of the rewatch. And if they've only watched it for the first time, this is one I can see people really kind of reacting in such a random way. Oh, it's going to blow people's minds.
It's going to be huge. Mark, what was the topic?
It's going to be the top three most annoying film characters in film history.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to that one.
It's not been a rant for a while.
No.
And we're nice with it. We're not going to be offensive or, you know, harsh.
But we are good with our rants, though.
We'll be all right.
Yeah.
So, Gemma, who are we masturbating over?
We're going to be masturbating over Daniel Day-Lewis.
That's,
like, crazy.
Oh, my God. Like, how? How do you even define what the best performance is from his career?
And the thing is, I'm pretty much a Johnny come lately to his work. I've seen pretty much everything he's ever done since maybe Gangs of New York, but his older stuff I've not seen, so I'm going to go back and watch things like My Left Foot and so on.
It's going to be an interesting one.
We've got loads of incredible prizes to give away, but we'll be announcing the winners of all the great ones we did here.
Yeah.
But do you know what, guys? I get sick of always announcing all these winners and us never benefiting.
Yeah.
And Ben made a comment on the last episode, and Dark Bunny heard this and they listened and they went, actually, that's a really good point. Those guys that have given us all this amazing business and these great designs actually don't have their own t-shirts.
Oh
hello.
What do you reckon I've got?
Oh,
I'm guessing a t-shirt. I'll be really annoyed if it's not.
It's t-shirts. Hey. So Gemma, you've got yourself a ladies one.
Lovely.
And Ben, you've got yourself a ladies one.
Cheers.
So we've actually finally got the nice wrapped limited edition. They've all gone now.
Beautiful.
Skip to the end. Stranger Things t-shirt.
I shall put a picture on that on social network at some point.
That would be nice. We don't need to, because people will be like, oh, I want one, and they can't buy them anymore. But, you know.
I'll make it look cool. Don't worry. I'll make this shit look good.
I might go to work in this on the next dress down day and someone says, oh, what's that? And I go, it's not for you.
Anything else on the episode?
Well, I tell you what, let's end it with our new regular feature on the show, which is called Skip to the Recommend. It's that time of the week where we like to each give a recommendation for something in the pop culture landscape that we're really digging. Doesn't have to be a movie, but it can be. It can be music related, it can be TV related, it can be a website, a YouTube video, it can be, you know, a dog that you saw in the street once.
Oh, he's spoiled it now. Alsatian.
Rover.
Preferably it's something that our listeners can go out and enjoy as well. And thank you to the people who responded to the last set of recommendations that we did. The book that I recommended, I've seen people who've now gone out and bought the book. I've seen people who are listening to the album that Gemma recommended, you know, and the documentary that Martin recommended. Please do check them out. That's why we're doing this.
It's really cool, isn't it?
It is really cool. Yeah. So let's do it all over again. Mark, what are you going to skip to the recommend?
It's a book this time.
You can't read.
It's called Mr. Smiley Goes to Town. No. It's a book I read about 6 months ago called I'm With the Band, Confessions of a Groupie, wrote by Pamela Des Barres. Now, this is all about a groupie who spent her life living in California in the 60s. She dated Jim Morrison, Jimmy Page, Noel Redding. She was there. If you think of Penny Lane's character in Almost Famous, this is the real life story. It's not trashy, it's a true rock and roll book of coming of age, and it's one of the greatest books I've read. It's all her diary entries, how she felt at the time, but it really felt like she was talking to me. She tells the stories of working in a strip joint, the music industry, how it was back then. It's not all just about shagging all these rock stars, but all the drug stories, all the backstage stories of Black Sabbath, Led Zeppelin. It's incredible, and it's the first book that I actually read without putting down. I just sat there for the whole day and was engrossed. It's not a massive book, but it's very honest, and people now go to this as the rock and roll coming of age book. And you know how much I love music.
Yeah.
It's incredible, guys.
Well, you had me at Black Sabbath.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, and this is exactly my cup of tea. I love those kind of behind the scenes, backstage story type things. It sounds great.
And it isn't just, oh, I slept with this guy or that guy. It's all about living on the tour bus and going on backstage and not being able to get access at certain gigs and all those stories that you think aren't true, like you see in those sort of spoof documentaries. This is real. And people read the reviews on Amazon and stuff. It's one of the most highest rated books within music.
That sounds really cool.
It really does.
Yeah. I will purchase a copy.
You won't, but...
No, I will. That sounds ace.
Good.
It sounds really cool. Like, you don't often hear the side of the groupie story.
No.
So I find that intriguing.
Lovely stuff.
Yeah. Gemma.
Yes. I'm going to be recommending a podcast series
Oh, it better be us.
Mark and me. It's amazing.
Shameless. It's from the makers of Serial and This American Life, so it's a podcast called S-Town.
Oh, I've heard about this, but I've not heard it.
Yeah, ditto.
Now, you said you binged on this book. I binged on this podcast. I could not press stop on this. So it's a 7-parter that's ready to download and can be found on their website, stownpodcast.org, or you can download it from iTunes or Stitcher. So it's a non-fictional tale in a similar vein to the very popular Serial podcast, and it's about a chap called John who detests his hometown in Alabama, which he affectionately calls Shittown. He contacts a reporter, which is the narrator, Brian Reed, and asks him to investigate an incident involving the son of a rich family who's been boasting around town that he killed someone and managed to get away with it. But then someone else ends up dead. So this exposes a bitter feud, a search for hidden treasure, and the unraveling mystery of one man's life. I could not stop listening to this. This
How long is each episode?
It can vary. It can vary from either 30 minutes to about an hour and 10 minutes.
Oh, nice.
And they released it
all... I just like the fact I can drive to work and listen to an episode at a time.
But it's riveting from start to finish. It's completely not what you would expect going in, so I recommend if you do download this and listen to it, please don't read anything about it. Just go by the synopsis. You're going to get your heart broken when you listen to it. It's a real gut punch of a podcast series. And the reason why Serial is so successful, and you hear it when you listen to S-Town, it's just fascinating.
See, I'm a mug because I read up on this, so I know what happens.
Oh, no.
And I know that the story the journalist guy thought he was going to make turned out to not be the story that ended up being told.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of wish I hadn't read up on it and been hit by that swerve.
And it really does knock the wind out your sails. Mm-hmm. It's completely captivating. You got to check it out.
I have to skip to the end. That's the podcast you should listen to.
Yeah. Always skip to the end first, though.
Yeah, definitely.
Absolutely, yeah. I'm going to finish it off with a movie. It's a Netflix movie, and it is Adam Sandler and Sandy Wexler. No, it isn't.
I was about to punch you in the face.
I was going
to
flip
this
table.
With that new mic, which is metal. Yeah. Just bam!
It is a Netflix movie, and it came out, I think, last week or the week before. It's called Win It All, and it's directed by a chap called Joe Swanberg. And Joe Swanberg is known for doing these really low-budget indie films that feel really authentic and really lived in. And I love his work. He's a proponent of a movement that they call mumblecore, which I think sounds derogatory. It makes them sound stupid and like you can't understand what they're saying. Him and the Duplass brothers are the kind of kings of the mumblecore film. But it just means these low-budget, realistic indies. And this one is co-written by and stars a chap called Jake Johnson, who, if you watch New Girl, is one of the lead characters in New Girl. It's Nick. And I absolutely love New Girl. It's one of my favourite comedy shows, and I love him. He's my favourite character because I kind of see a lot of myself in him, because he's just a man who is older than his body. He's just a grumpy old man.
He's got like a little turtle face as well.
I was watching an episode the other day where he says a line something like, "I love getting older because I'm finally growing into my personality." And I couldn't agree with that more. So I love him. And he and Joe Swanberg have done a few films together. They did one a few years back called Drinking Buddies. I don't know if you ever saw
I've heard of it.
Him and Olivia Wilde, and that's brilliant as well. Mm. And in this one, Win It All, which as I say was co-written with Johnson, it's about a guy played by Johnson who is a gambling addict, and he's friends with this chap who is a criminal. He comes to Jake Johnson's character with this bag and says, "I need you to look after this while I'm in prison, but don't look in it." This guy goes off to prison, and Jake can't help himself, and he looks in this bag, and it turns out there's $100,000 in here. And as I say, he's a gambling addict.
Oh,
and
my Lord.
He ends up gambling half of it away, and then it's how he tries to get the money back.
Ooh,
and
it's,
nice.
It's quite dark. It's not an outright comedy. It is funny, but again, it feels real, and there's a nice romantic subplot, and Jake Johnson has never been better. Watch Win It All, and also watch Drinking Buddies.
I'm going to do both, definitely.
Both fantastic films.
Oh, this is what I love.
We've done it again, guys.
You've all got some nice stuff. Yeah. Not stuff I've seen before or heard before.
Yeah.
Oh, listen to another podcast seems a bit unfaithful, but I don't mind doing it. Wow.
Yeah. So that was another successful round of Skip to the Recommend, and that brings us to the very end. So, see you in 2 weeks.
Have you ever seen a one-trick pony and feel so happy and free? If you've ever seen a one-trick pony, then you've seen me. Have you ever seen a one-legged dog making his way down the street? If you've ever seen a one-legged dog, then you've seen me. Then you've seen me. I come and stand at every door, and you've seen me.
always leave with less than I had before. And you've seen me, but I can make you smile when the blood it hits the floor. Tell me, friend, can you ask for anything more? Tell me, can you ask for...